You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 41 on Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Guss, here to break down episode 3 as we do every week with international guests, with exceedingly fitting, it seems, international guests every week that are like cosmically placed to be here based on what is relevant to their game and what is happening in the action of the episode. I'm not spoiled. I know I said last week if it perfectly fits this guest, maybe I'm just spoiled. I'm not spoiled. That's why it's so ridiculous and incredible, and we'll talk about the guests that we have this week and how perfect it is for this episode. But I am so excited to welcome in this guest. We had him on an extended exit a couple of months ago when he got voted out of Brains versus Brawn in shocking fashion, and I've been so excited to talk to him again. We have him here to recap. It is the great Simon Mee. Simon, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It is it's just bizarre that I've ended up on this episode to be talking about this and this kind of nature of it all. So yeah, are you the Oracle?
I don't know what's going on. I'm manifesting something with the booking form. I don't know what's happening. But to give the context, if anyone has missed what's happened, Simon, unfortunate that you are renowned, that you got voted out with two idols in your pocket. It was historic in Australian Survivor context. And in this one episode, Brad came in with nothing. And in the space of 40 minutes, he found two advantages. And he got voted out with them in his pocket. Like, Brad, I'm sorry that we did that to you, but in the future.
I listened to the podcast last week with Teresa, and you guys were joking about the fact that,
yeah,
you know, if Xander goes in this kind of nature, like, this is, you know, it's going to be way too good. And then Brad obviously finds mm-hmm. two advantages and then goes home all at once.
Oh,
and then
God.
I'm like, oh my God. Like, I called you straight after the episode after I watched it. I'm like, can you believe this? What the hell? It's going to be a miracle, and it happened. So, yeah, very funny.
It was a lot. Okay, also, it's the fact that he told a close ally, a number one ally, who then chose to depower him and cut him off of the knees because, like, of the pressure and threat and fear of two idols. Like, you understand what this plan was called, right?
This was the Chandra Bullock.
I've been holding on to that for 2 days.
Well played. Yeah, that's good. I do like to think there's a little bit of a, you know, a difference between, you know, there are a lot of similarities, I guess, but, you know, a bit of a difference in the fact that, like, you know, I found my two idols in a, you know, within a, I think it was a 24-hour period, like a one-on-one day and one on the next day, and Brad was in very short succession. But I did hang on to them for, 14, 15 days, which was the longest of any of my season. But yeah, I think that then the similarities come in where you've got too many advantages, you become such a big threat. And yeah, people get offside about it and they want to do something about it while they can.
Yeah, there's something interesting there about, like, the threat of the two things. Like, obviously yours are two idols, his is like an unactivated idol, and steal a vote that he can't even use. Like, it is different, and there aren't that many similarities between you and Brad as players generally, but there's just like how much it mirrored was ridiculous. But also there is, I think, a little bit of something, like, you could tell with Shan when he's showing her both, he's like, oh my god, this is a lot. Like, there might be something to telling people about too, and just like how overwhelming that is, where psychologically, even though it was like different advantages, like, there might be some synergy there to just how much that is and how scared people become of it.
Yeah. And it's a really important thing to have a really good read on the people around you as well. You know, I think that Brad, you know, he obviously sees how close he is with Shan, or thinks he is there. And, you know, he's just, you know, running around and going, doing his spy shack thing, and then going back and, you know, and telling her, then telling her about the advantages and everything. And you know, that's all happened over a very short amount of time. And you don't have, that relationship hasn't really been tested yet, versus, you know, I'd been through multiple tribal councils with my alliance and had, you know, built really great relationships and, you know, thought that I was in a really good spot where, you know, this is something to potentially bring us, you know, closer together.
Yeah.
But then, you know, just you hear it so often is that, you know, this early in the game, you know, big threats need to be neutralized, and people get scared by people playing too hard too soon.
Yeah, Brad was doing a lot in this episode. We can talk about it because there's been that sentiment, and Steven even mentioned on the know-it-alls, and I talked about it last week, the sentiment of, like, you know, we're here to play Survivor and take risks, and that's how you play and that's how you win, which, again, I take a little bit of umbrage with. Like, I don't think that's always how you should play. I don't think that's how every player should play. It's possibly how, like, a shot out of a cannon player like Brad should play, how, like, a clearly threatening player like you should play. Like, there's definitely, like, nuance there, though, that it's not just, like, people who play big win, or people, that's, like, the winning strategy. So it's definitely an interesting one for Brad. I think it's also really hard for him because I think he did have a legitimately really close bond with Shan and like, legitimate trust there. Mm. It's just much like Evie last week, Shan is extremely aligned with every single person on the tribe. So she's getting rid of someone she's super close to no matter what, like Evie did last week. And Brad gets sacrificed there, and had Shan sacrificed JD, like, she talked about how hard it was for her, like, that would have been another really strong connection cut. So it's really hard in these small tribes. Brad was doing a lot in this episode that we will definitely talk about, but I do apologize for traumatizing you with some of the similarities here, which is, I guess, what this podcast has become. Like, so I've been going to traumatize our guests with how similar the situations are.
Oh, look, I'll take it on the chin. It is a good laugh. And hey, look, I still did it to myself, so I deserve it.
No, Simon, we're so happy to have you here. Firstly, before we get into everything that was happening in this episode and your thoughts on the season, how are you going? I mean, I don't think the listeners understand how lucky we are to have you. You are getting married in a week from now. And instead of prepping for that, or, I mean, I know you had your bucks more recently, but, like, you're here on this podcast with me and you are getting married in a week from now. Like, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a massive year for me. There's no kind of two ways around it. Like, I had a career change. My Survivor dream came true. I got engaged. I'm now, you know, getting married in a week's time. And yeah, thankfully everything for the wedding's pretty much all planned out. Mm-hmm. And Beck is currently getting her hair done for next weekend. So I had this nice little window of time. Mm-hmm. And when you asked me, I'm like, you know what? I would absolutely love to come on and share my two cents. Because yeah, as a Survivor fan, it's such a cool thing to be a part of. And you know, I've always been a big fan of the show, but this opening, it's really opened my eyes to the super fans behind it all. And that's been like really awesome to kind of see and be welcomed into and be a part of. So yeah, thank you for everything that you do there and for welcoming me in as well.
No, thank you for being here the week of your wedding. Mazel tov from the whole podcast community. That's super exciting. But I did want to get your thoughts on the whole season, because I know that you're like a big super fan of the Australian franchise, maybe fell off a bit with US, and like, this is a new era. It's an era where it's 26 days. You got voted out, I think, day 25 and didn't make it to the merge. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different game to the one you played. Probably a game, if you can get some sort of American passport, like, this might be the game for you. As I said, if you were on this season, you're like going out in like blazing fire at the final four on day 25. It's a very different day 25 between the franchises.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So one day.
I might talk about my relationship with Survivor first.
Yeah.
I look, I loved it growing up as a kid. But, you know, just watching it for like the challenges and seeing these guys out there and the game that they were playing and going, wow, I'd love to do that. And that's where my kind of dream started there. And then, yeah, it fell off the bandwagon a bit as, you know, life kind of gets in the way. And then when the Australian Survivor came up, I absolutely fell in love with that again. And, you know, watched all that. I was just so passionate. And I actually sat next to Lee Castledine at a breakfast after that 2016 season, and that really inspired me to apply in 2017 and 18. So that was really cool there. But now, like getting back into it, I'm going back and doing my research and my preparation for my season, connecting back with the US seasons that I'd seen as a kid. Like, I didn't have time to watch any of them, and I haven't watched the US season before, this year. But Boston Rob was someone who like really inspired me as a kid. And then when his whole meeting Amber on the show, I was like, oh, I need to go on to Survivor to meet my wife. Like, that's just kind of something that I thought, you know, oh, that's the way that I can, you know, when I grow up, like, I'll be able to, you know, get a girlfriend that way. and then seeing guys like, you know, Ozzy and Yule, and going like, oh, hang on a tick, like, that was in like 2002, 2004 and stuff like that. And kind of piecing it all back together. So I'm looking forward to the point where I get to go back through some of these seasons and go and just see how much I actually do remember, because there are bits and pieces that do jog my memory, but it's been bizarre. But yeah, I'm absolutely loving it so far. And this season is, I love the way that they've set it up for the whole new era. You drop the four, keep the one, and really keeping people on their toes with the new format, and throwing a bunch of people who know the game, love the game, and it's all combining in so much chaos. And the way that they're setting up with the twists and the, you know, advantages and the beware advantages, I'm really enjoying it so far. You know, I think Survivor is better than no Survivor in my world. But there's a lot. And even having these two beware advantages live at the same time and seeing people play around the idols and around these advantages when we're not really even seeing the social dynamics form, there's a lot to get your head around. And I think that's, you know, it makes for interesting and a little bit confusing viewing. So yeah, it's a lot.
Yes, I have it here. It is a lot. In terms of like the formational aspect of Survivor, like, I really love that. And for people our age or really younger than us, with what JD's talking about, like, there is that sense of, like, I grew up with this thing. Like, it's so important to me. Like, the same way The Simpsons were important to, like, how my humor developed and still develops, you know, as an adult. Like, it seeped into not only who I am, but, like, who I was becoming and who I grew up to be. And I think Survivor is, like, George talked about it, Haley talked about it, you've talked about it, like, obviously important to me too. And, like, I mean, the character moments that we did get this episode, I cried twice in this episode. Obviously, Shan's, like, incredibly heartbreaking confessional. And even hearing JD talk about how much the show has meant to him, that, you know, Malcolm and Ozzy and Wu are the reason he wears the necklace. And the necklace is so dumb, JD. But, like, that's, like, a beautiful reason to wear that stupid necklace. And like, that has a lot of meaning. And to see it, like, how it's affected people on the show and they talk about it, like, I really love that aspect of the storytelling.
Mm. And we've got, like, they're also quite, I mean, with Shannon, JD and Liana, like, they're all quite young as well, but they've grown up with this game and they know it and they're passionate about it and they're here to play, and they're all putting so much pressure on themselves as well, because this is like their dream come true and their huge opportunity. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that shapes their direction through the game, and you know, if they can keep themselves sane and not break down as much with the internal pressure that they put on themselves to perform and do it for themselves and their families, because it's what their lifelong dreams have been.
Yeah, I know that there's like two schools of thought on like recruits who don't know anything about it versus people who care so much. For me, I love watching people who care in everything in my life. Like, I love people who care about things. I care about things. I care too much about most things that I care about. And in the same way, like, I love watching people where this, you know, they will bleed for this game. Like, it's everything to them. So I know there's two schools of thought. I know it can be entertaining in different ways. I know not everyone should be a super fan necessarily. But for me, in what I watch and what I enjoy, mostly, yeah, like, when Liana talks about it, how much it means to her, even, like, whatever your care level is, whether you love the show or whatever, whatever it's important to you, I'm going to be engaged if you are extremely passionate about this thing. And I love watching JD talk about it and how much he cares about it. And I loved it on your season with the few fans that we got. Like, you clearly cared about it so much. And that connected it, you know, you to me in the show, that you had this care level for what you were doing.
I know, I'm completely on board with, like, seeing people who are passionate about things that they do. Like, I love people who are passionate in life. But when it comes to Survivor, like, yes, I'm very much so. Look, I don't think we just need all super fans, but I feel like you need to have an underlying appreciation for the experience in the show, as opposed to coming in completely green. And it was actually probably one of my downfalls. It was just assuming that people would know about the game, how it works, and just and also
that is a downfall.
Yeah, and also making logical decisions based on those assumptions. And there were two things that in a mindset that I just never even considered, that there would be people on there on my season who didn't know the show. So bringing it back to this, like, I'm so glad that we have so many people who are really invested in this. Like, even what Nasir said, he grew up learning how to speak English based on Survivor, and look where he is now. So it's all those, that's a special little thing that I am really loving about this. And we've got a bunch of great characters and the diversity across the cast, I am absolutely all for it. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I think everyone has thrown themselves into it, and they need to, because as you said, you always need to be on your toes. Like, for me personally, like, apathy is just one of my pet peeves. So that's just the way that I engage as a viewer. I want to see people care for whatever their personal reasons are. And I think we do have that. And I think this cast is carrying the season. Like, I will, like, to talk about the discourse around, because obviously what the main takeaways are, like, this is a lot, you know, I think it is, like, it's objectively ridiculous at this point. Like, so many different advantages and votes stolen and taken and added and not. And I've seen, like, some tweets out there that are like, it's not that hard, like, I understand it. And to that I say, it's physically impossible to follow this fully. Like, broadly, yeah, we can keep up. But if you're saying you fully understand it, you're kind of telling on yourself that you're just looking at it on more of a shallow sense, which is fine, on more of a broad sense. But if you want to, like, delve deep into the intricate detail, which is obviously, like, what we do here, there are still, like, so many questions that we just don't know. No one knows right now what's about to happen to Xander's idol. It's just not something that we as viewers are aware of. So it can't be something we're... And there's many other questions. Like, it can't be something that we as viewers are fully following.
And you can't do it, and you can't tell that story in 42 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, there is so much going on, and so much going on behind the scenes and the other conversations that are happening. Like, so there is so much that it does get lost. And I think that because these advantages and twists have really formed and taken the direction of the show so far, we're not seeing as much of that, those kind of organic connections. And it's really like, we know how much of the show, like, what percentage of the show was based around, you know, these advantages kind of coming to play, and then tribal council. Like, you know, there was very little else in there. So, you know, it's just so much to, like, to take in. And then that's why, you know, this is always really cool to, you know, for us to sit back and speculate. And then, you know, we hear the exit interviews down the track, and then you're like, you piece it all together from there.
Yeah, I mean, even AU will cut out huge storylines with, like, five times the time. Like, it's really, really difficult to try and follow it all. There are questions, like, even in Brad's ex interview with Rob asked, like, would your steal vote carry through a revote? Like, Brad didn't even know. You know, like, it's not on the note. I paused on the note, and we'll talk about it based on, like, international and historical context, because we'll definitely talk about how the steal vote possibly could have been used, but he should know that. The players should know. We should know. Like, we can follow it. Yep. Like, and definitely as we break it down over the next couple of hours, like, we'll follow the broad dynamics, I think, or we'll speculate. But there are questions that the players have clearly, and that we have, that just aren't answerable. So it's not possible to be fully across everything that is happening. In saying that, I will say, and I want to put it out there, like, I am enjoying it. I feel like I, you know, because we get it, and it's like literally my job to like pick apart and be critical of things if I feel they need, you know, criticism, which often they do. But I am enjoying it. Like, I think, as I said, the cast is amazing. It is really fun. It's really funny. The broccoli stuff was like laugh out loud hilarious. Like, the votes have been interesting. We're given like intriguing decisions, and you can agree with them or not, but like, we can talk about production decisions, which for me is, as a podcaster, is fascinating. We can talk about decisions players are making. Like, I am enjoying it. I'm enjoying the non-linear editing. Yes, it's a lot. It's a lot as well. But like, they're being playful with it. There's like this fun kind of spirit of the fire tokens living on like you pay for things, but more in like risk and votes than in money. Like, they're trying things. They're trying too much, and it definitely should be a little simpler. Maybe just like, hey, you found this, you know, this idol. If you want to activate it, give up your vote for the next two times, or make it cross tribal. Like, do one of the things, maybe not all of it. It's too much. But in saying that, I still find it fun and playful. We will have our gripes with it. We will criticize parts of it. But I actually am still really enjoying it. And I know some people are kind of out on it, and I'm liking it.
So, yeah, a couple of things on that. I think that the players should know what that means for them. Like, it's okay if they don't have time to explain to the audience.
But
I think
really
that,
know.
The players should, yeah, they need to know how to play around that stuff. Like, that's so huge.
Yes.
But I think that all the players, from what I've been able to pick up in their, you know, their little bits and pieces of camera, is that everyone knows that this is a new era, a new format, a new game. And I think they've all come in with that kind of attitude. Which is really good, knowing that it's going to be different, it's going to be fast paced, of what they've kind of said. So they've set their expectations there, and yeah, I think they did a really good job of that in the, you know, the kind of lead up in the first episode, and being like, this is different. Like, you know, we are going to see new things, we are going to push these players in new ways, and I'm really glad that they did that up front, because that helped set my expectations as well. And I am loving it. You know, it is interesting. And the way that they've kind of gone about it is they're really focusing in on these social dilemmas, which we, you know, I know we spoke about just before we started recording about the not prisoners.
Not prisoners.
Dilemmas.
They're not a prisoner. Because Rob's calling it like clear. Prisoner's Dilemma Island, and it's like killing me slowly. So it's just not a prisoner's dilemma.
But they're social dilemmas, but they're survivor dilemmas. They're new survivor dilemmas that, you know, you have to work out, what position am I in the tribe, and how do I take this information and work around with it, and how is it going to impact my next steps in the game? What's everyone around me? How are they going to react to it? And it's a beautiful thing to see people think through that. So look, I'm glad that they have managed their expectations on it, and Well, even though it's a lot, I'm all for it, and I am loving it.
Yeah, I mean, going through the social dilemmas every week and, like, working out what people should have done and, like, really just, like, going point by point for me and trying... Like, that to me is, like, the beauty of the game, like, decision-making and social interactions and, like, some game theory that we recently did off-season podcasting about that really does lend itself. Like, I actually really do love doing that, so I enjoy talking about that every week. In terms of, like, the new era stuff, I almost feel like the way they phrased it, like, they set our expectations incorrectly, because with drop the four, keep the one, and like we're taking away the rice and stuff, it felt like it was going to be paired back, like we were going back to one, like we thought we were kind of like, that's how I took it, and there was also a lot of like, fire tokens are too complicated, we just want to have fun. I thought it was going to be just a little bit more simple, more harsh, because it was shorter, and maybe more of like the survival aspect, which we've lost more in modern survival, which obviously is there, but we just don't get enough time with it, but they don't have rice and they've got these penalties. But I didn't think that the new era was more like, I don't think a lot of people thought that it was going to be like, when we say drop the four, keep the one, what we mean is like, it is a new game, but that game is like Monopoly.
Yeah,
and like, you know, it's like, that's what it feels like. Like, it just went in a different direction than what I thought. It went light years ahead, possibly, and different. I thought it was going to pair back. I think that's the impression they gave, but obviously not on purpose.
I didn't expect that. Like, I thought it would be more different. Like, it's going to keep the same basic principles of what it is, but it's going to flip it on its head in a new fast-paced kind of game, but then, like, it's just going to be new. I won't be surprised or disappointed by anything, I think, you know, unless I, like, drop the final tribal or something like that, but I think there's base mechanics which will carry it through, but, you know, in seeing them, like, you know, losing losing flints and not getting rice, like, yeah, they're probably a little, you know, little bits of this new era that I'd like to see more of, because that's a, you know, their dilemmas in itself and seeing how does that affect the dynamics of it all. But they're obviously, you know, in that 42 minutes that I've got, like, they're obviously focusing on the, you know, these, the you know, big advantages, which obviously control the direction of the game so much more, or in this case, almost don't.
Yeah, it's just because he said, like, fire tokens are too complicated, we just want to have fun, and now it's like, it feels more complicated than ever. But anyway, our expectations were set correctly. We need to adjust. This is what the new game is, and, like, we're in it now, and we will, you know, engage with it in that way. That's what I think.
Yeah, I didn't watch season 40 of US Survivor. I thought it was more important for me to watch the Australian Survivors, but yeah. I did, like, I knew about the fire tokens, and I tried to cram study, you know, as much as I could, and speak to a couple of my you know, Survivor friends on, you know, what that kind of meant and stuff. And it was a lot to kind of, you know, get my head around quickly and going, shit, how am I going to, like, you know, stick to my kind of strategies, but then factor in all these extra bits and pieces. And I'm like, and in the end, I'm just like, oh, geez, I just hope we don't have fire tokens in our season. Yeah. But, you know, I think it helped me set up the mentality about whatever the twists are or whatever gets thrown at the player's way, you just need to be adaptable and you need to be creative and you need to be open to change. And that's something that just will never change in this game.
Yeah, probably for the viewers too. We're going to be open to change, and this is the change that we have, and it's changed.
Hey, and look how well you came around in Brains versus Brawn. Like, you know, after the first couple of weeks, we were like, what are we doing? And then we got there in the end.
I don't know that that's true. Like, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a regression, I mean, around the one-person votes. So, like, look, I hate change. I really do. Possibly that does work into my Survivor coverage. Like, I moved around a ton as a kid. And I know that that's something that I hate. So, yeah, you're right. You know, now I'm having I traumatized you, and now you're kind of, like, putting a mirror back at me on my Survivor coverage and why something's possibly hurt me. But I'm like, this is different.
You know what makes it okay?
I don't want to move again, Mom. Yeah.
The thing that makes it okay is the fact that you're passionate about it. And, you know, as long as you've got those, whatever your opinions are, as long as you're there with passion, I think that, you know, that makes it okay for me, regardless of what it is. So, yeah, I love that.
Thank you. Well, your mileage may vary, but I appreciate you saying that. But, yeah, no, I mean, I come in, like, I love this show so much. Like, everything obviously comes in with a lot of love, but we delve in deep, and that's the point. And in saying that, like, let's talk about this new Beware Advantage and what we did and didn't like about it as a concept. It's so unfair that they would call it Beware Advantage again for two reasons. The first being, it makes it really confusing for the podcast because it's the same as the other one, but they're very, very different. So that's my main gripe. No, but the second is, like, what? Like, this is completely different to the other. Like, I thought that the first one was the Beware Advantage. Now I realize that it's more just like a general statement. Every time anything is found, even when they're not the same at all, it's more like Beware, comma, Advantage. Different grammar there. You know, you put a stroke in the middle, it changes the meaning. That's different to me. Like, I think they should have called it, like, secret mission. Scary secret mission. Like, that's what it was, a mission. It wasn't an advantage, really. And it wasn't the Beware Advantage that we saw last week.
I like it. It's new. It's different. I don't think the timing is right. Like, when you've got two Beware Advantages in play at the same time, you're trying to work around it all. And look, to be honest, like, I had to watch this a couple of times before, you know, this podcast, and have all my notes down to truly understand the full dynamics of what was going on. And it's a lot to, like, yeah, a lot to take in a very short amount of time. So yes, I did like it as an idea, but I feel like it's fallen a little bit short because of the, I don't know, the outcomes just weren't. Like, nothing really happened at the end, apart from Brad having
one person got to steal a vote and was immediately voted out, and two other people got nothing. It was a good way to spend time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it literally has no more. It was a steal a vote he couldn't even use, and now he's gone. The other two people got nothing. Like, it actually carries no relevance beyond the episode itself. But in saying that, are interesting dynamics that came out of it. Like, the way people make decisions is something we'll analyze. The interaction, the fact that, like, Sydney and Tiffany seem to have no love now, like, that I think could pay off. So it was still meaningful.
How do you get the opportunity to go away onto, you know, to have this, to be able to meet with other tribes? Like, you've got to still it's one of those things where you've got to be able to push away your almost emotions and be like, you have a chance to connect with someone else from another tribe. Like, Sydney's gone in there. Brad's now gone home, and now she just doesn't like Tiff. Like, or Tiff, and Tiff doesn't like Sydney. Like, there's no advantage for either of them there, and having that meeting with other players from other tribes. Like, that's a real missed opportunity there.
Yeah, it was night and day from last week's mission, in that it literally was night and day. But also the way that like Evie and Deshaun use that so socially and so actively to get like this really constructive, positive relationship, and everything Evie gave to get stuff out of that, and the way that Deshaun received it, to the point where I gave them both chizzy points, partly
yes.
for Evie there was more going on, but like really for how that mission was handled, because it was so social. And we'll talk about the decisions, but I definitely thought like the most egregious thing that they did, particularly Sydney and Tiffany, was came out of like the social opportunity with such an anti-social result, where they're like so against each other, and Sydney's like, well, I hope Brad got the steal of vote and not Tiffany. It's like, you spent 5 minutes together, like, and we'll talk about the way that they interacted, but like, how did it come out so negative? You were gifted a social opportunity that now you've had and made a negative relationship. That to me was like poorly played by
mind-blowing.
I can't
help but feel that was driven by Tiff. I feel like she came in very aggressively there and almost pigeonholed Sydney into pushed her into a corner where she didn't have anywhere to go there. And it's not like Sydney said anything to Tiff's face to get her offside, but they both just walked away with a distasteful feeling towards each other.
Yeah.
I felt like that Tiff really came into, play hard, play, you to play so strong on the when you before even kind of trying to build a relationship there, and put her cards on the table, and I feel like she just butchered that from the start in terms of her approach.
I can't put it all on Tiffany. Like, I felt like Brad and Sydney seemed to almost gang up from the start, and they're trying to like coerce Tiffany into being like, you don't need your vote, do you? Like, it was like, to me, it wasn't as much as like, all right, well, where are you at? Like, let's be collaborative about this. It was like more trying to coerce into it. And then she doesn't back down. So she comes back strong. I put that pretty much on all of them. Like, but I really like Sydney and Tiffany are the ones who come out. It seems particularly negative. So it is on them. Then Tiffany, like, you've been given the golden opportunity that they didn't have episode one, where you can talk about it. And look at the way Evie used that last week. It was like, hey, can I gift this to you? Like, someone could have been so actively social to be like, guys, I don't want to risk. I want to protect, and I want to give you guys that opportunity. Like, I'm going to get nothing. I'm happy to just take the out. And you guys, get your extra votes. Like, that's what Evie did last week. Get your steal of votes. And that wasn't what was done, to the point where then Tiffany says, like, maybe we should just leave it to chance. Like, no, you have the ability to communicate.
No, yeah.
You passed up this ability. And then the relationship is so bad that they misread each other, where one of them could have actually got a vote steal over nothing. So that's how much the connection has been missed, to the point where they both misread each other. Sydney even says, like, I'm leaning to the top, and Tiffany can't trust that. And like, it was just like such a total misread from both of them, and the relationship, I think, going forward in a swap or a merge, I think we might see some negative payoff to that.
See, I don't think it was as much as a misread from Sydney. I think that she saw Tiff, and in the situation that Sydney was in, she knows, and I'm sure that you really appreciate how much she's like, my vote is my most important
thing.
She's
so conservative. That was my favorite thing she did. Yes, be conservative,
Sydney. And it's also clever, because they haven't tested their relationships over at Lulu yet, so I can understand just how important that is. But then, Tiffany, when she just makes such a big error to, make, because we don't see her making her decision there, but we see her getting back to her tree mail and going, oh, there's no tarp here. And it's like, hang on a tick. You came in trying to, like, you knew how conservative that Sydney was going to be on this. There was no chance of her ever stealing a vote.
Yeah.
And then Tiffany has that confessional where she's there and saying that, I've kind of done the right thing for the people around me. I hope my alliance sees the right thing, thinks I've done the right thing. And then she doesn't end up with a tarp. She doesn't end up with an extra vote. And then she thinks she's done the right thing by Sydney and Brad. Like, What?
Yeah, it's a worse misread from Tiffany, because Sydney said, I'm probably going to take the top. And so if I was Tiffany, I'd be like, okay, cool. If I was Sydney and I was looking at Tiffany, who's saying like, let's see how it goes, I also would be, A, she was already like leaning to that herself because she wanted to take the out and protect, which, as I said, like, that's totally on her. Like, I don't mind either of them taking the out and protecting, because this is what the game affords them, that Xander and Brett in the first Beware advantage, like, there is no out. Once you open it, you have lost all your votes unless this thing is activated. This one gives you an out. Like, and that's something, we can talk about the difference in the not prisoner's dilemma, but that's something that you can take where you're like, best case scenario, I get a top. Worst case, I leave here, no harm, no foul, nothing was done. And I don't really mind anyone making that decision if they just want to protect their vote and their agency. And even though Sydney seems to be in a comfortable majority, and even though Tiffany, I think, like, Liana and Evie are making that decision anyway. I don't know if she necessarily needs a vote. I don't know how much she knows that. But I still see, you know, backing your own agency. For someone like Sydney, she doesn't even know if this tribe will go to tribal council. Worst case scenario is being on, you know, the first tribe after a swap and you don't have a vote. So yeah. I think I get protecting either way. But I do think it was a worse misread from Tiffany, because if you do want a vote steal and you kind of want to get something out of that, like, you're not going to get a top. You know that Brad is taking the vote. So. Yeah, like, it was a strange misread, because she did say, like, I'm saying, but that's how bad the mistrust was, that she literally said it and stuck with it and was true to it, and Tiffany had no trust in her that much, that it was, like, it wasn't even just neutral, it was, like, actively negative, and that's why she makes that decision.
Yeah, and look, this is always really hard, but we had 30 seconds of them talking before they went off to make their decision. And look, I can imagine that surely they would have been there for at least 5 minutes. So, you know, I wish we would have been able to see a little bit more of that, or have a little bit more on the secret scene to, you know, understand the real dynamics of what went down in that kind of conversation there.
Yeah.
But yeah, still so bizarre for Tiffany not to, not to at least steal then. And
it's down to that central relationship.
But now she's ended up back at camp and she's gone away. And now, so Evie and Liana know that she's gone and she comes back with nothing. Like, and then she was probably, you know, she's also sitting on the bottom of those three. Like, she probably knows how close that Evie and Liana are. So now she's gone away at midnight and come back with nothing. Like, that's always a really difficult thing to do as well. So I'm not so sure if she really thought that through.
In terms of coming back with nothing, I feel like because Evie's been to a similar, we'll talk about the differences, but like a similar kind of game where you can take the out and come back with nothing. Like, I think they might believe that that was something that she could have done, and she can explain it in such detail about exactly what happened and that she just protected. And I think they would trust that. It's more just for me that, like, she did kind of miss an opportunity, but I see protecting the agency. For me, it's just like the social read. And the social relationship was so bad. I kind of felt like Sydney was the one who told no one. If Sydney comes back with the top, what is that conversation? Like, I don't even know that that's good. Like, hey, guys, I went on a secret mission and I didn't tell any of you guys, but I actually ended up with this top. So, like, is that, like, if you were a kid sneaking out of the house at night and you come back, you're like, Mom and Dad, I was out all night, but, like, don't worry, I brought you cake. They'd be like, wait, no, not about the cake. Where were you? Like, I feel like Luvu would be like, and you told not, like, we didn't see her tell anyone. So, like, was she just like, if I held the top and I had the secret mission and I had to, like, out myself on it because I now had a gift for the tribe, like, I might just throw that top in the ocean.
I think there'd be some kind of agency where you can actually, you know, you turn up with the top and just lay it all out on the table.
No, I would just be like, I found it in the woods, or it fell from the sky. Like, I don't know that I'd be like, I was away last night, just like, trying to get something for myself.
Yeah, but I think she's done the decision to, you know, to do something for the tribe.
That's true. That is
in that whole moral dilemma. You do end up with it there. You can then go on to explain to the rest of the tribe about how that kind of dynamic works, and that kind of information is definitely power. And I hope if you tell a story like a normal person, not like JD, and we're getting, you know, with all the extra like bits and pieces in there, that hopefully they, you know, would be enough to believe you, and if you have those good relationships, like, you'd be able to back yourself there. But going down to it, like, Brad was never going to take the top. Like, he's just so excitable. He's like a kid on Christmas. So him walking in there, I mean, him finding the Beware advantage in the first place, like the first one and the second one, I don't even think Brad's brain comprehended what the Beware part meant. Like, he was just so stoked to be there in that moment and to have all this power and be on this adventure and be playing Survivor, and then he goes off and does this. I don't feel like, you know, he's like, he was always going to be taking advantage to put himself first. And I love that passion, regardless of how stupid it may have been.
Yeah, can we talk about what it says about human nature that they all opened it no question? Like, Brad did it twice. But Brad, I think, is like the Xander last week. To me, like, that speaks to human nature, like, no preconceived notions. Like, okay, from a neutral perspective, most Survivor players are probably just going for it. All right, that's a Brad part.
Can you fill me in on some Survivor, like, US history? Has anything like this been done previously where anyone had, like, you know, maybe something that's, you know, a subtle note towards this may not be the best thing for you?
Well, no, because the one thing is, like, Jamal in season 39 took something hanging from a tree and he lost his vote, and it didn't say anything. Like controversially, it didn't say anything. That was, like, the only real, like, disadvantage. Like, I don't think we've ever seen Beware. Sydney opening it to me is interesting, and she said she didn't even see the Beware, which to me, like, that is fine. Like, I can't really criticize that. Like, no one would think it would say Beware. Like, you know, however many seasons of packages found on the floor, you just kind of open it and you see what it says.
It's always something good, right? If you think about what it would be then, yeah, it's always, an advantage is always a good thing for you, right?
Yes.
So it's really flipping the game on its head there.
But we got a comment on Twitter, sorry that I don't have the at right now, but I think the most interesting thing about this was that Deshaun knows what the Beware advantage is and seems to be Sydney's closest ally. So the fact that she didn't even think to check may mean that Deshaun didn't tell her about that information. So that, to me, is something to keep an eye on.
Hang on. Okay, you're just talking about Deshaun telling Sydney general about what...
Well, they seem to be so tight. So you'd think that if Deshaun had come back and been like, Evie told me that this is the mechanism for Idol, she'd be like, let me see if there's a Beware. And she didn't even think to check. So that is fascinating to me. The worst one for me is Tiffany. Tiffany, how are you opening this when you think a Beware advantage is what Xander had, and what Xander has is terrible? She got extraordinarily lucky that she got something way more balanced, so much easier, with an out where nothing could happen that Xander doesn't have. Like, I cannot believe that someone could see the first Beware advantage, think something could be even remotely in that category, and still open it. So for Tiffany, that's the one that I just purely don't understand.
Because she's a paranoid player, and, you know, she... I don't think she had, like, would... had the capacity to have those thoughts, but in that moment, in the heat of it, when she's found that and being like, oh my God, this is great. Like, I don't think she'd be able to piece all that together. Some of her erratic behavior and just how paranoid she's been, I don't think she would have been able to see that read there.
There's something interesting about players finding things, and it's just like, it's like if you get an email that's like winner and you're like, okay, cool. And it's like a bad prize. Like, I think they're just excited to have the thing. Like, why aren't they all sitting around and talking about how bad, like, some of these things are? Like, even like Jeannie is saying, oh, like, Brad, my number one ally, has it, which I would rather have it, but, you know, it's better.
These things, I think these advantages, like the best, like the, players obviously didn't know, but the Beware advantage, like it's going to come with some kind of risk, obviously. I think that's spelt out pretty clearly.
It says Beware.
I would be so cautious. Like, the risks I took are very calculated, and I don't think that would be a calculated risk that I would take. What I would want is that one of my closest allies would
exactly
have that. Yes.
So when Jeannie and Liana are upset, you're like,
yes,
no, you're
Evie,
in a great
Liana,
position. Yes.
Who else saw? Jeannie. Yeah, they're the winners here.
Yes.
They know what's going on and they're keeping track of it and they don't have to face any of the consequences.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, when Jeannie's like, I'd much rather have it. It's like, no, this is a bad thing. But knowing where it is and that it's with someone that you trust and you can control it and possibly even benefit from it without suffering for it, like, you just won the jackpot, Jeannie. Be happy.
Shan as well. Like, Shan knows as well.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I want to talk about what Brad was doing through this whole thing. Firstly, they spoke about our know-it-alls, obviously. The fake body, the Brad Crow, was obviously hilarious. Steven spoke about, like, I love Steven talking about this on Know-It-Alls. He was saying, because I was as well, I'm like, how did you say you were in the bathroom? And Steven's like, not only would I say I was in the bathroom, but, like, I would say all the time, I feel sick. And no one would ever wonder if I was looking for idols because they all just assumed I was always in the bathroom. And I was like, Steven, that is brilliant and humiliating for you to admit on this podcast. But, I mean, yeah, like, I would think that that's the thing. Like, do you have to create a fake version of yourself? Because if someone's like, hey, Brad, wake up, turn it over, and it's like some debris, you might traumatize them out of the game. So that would be an interesting
thing. Like, that was good. That was really clever. And yeah, I would have liked to, you know, it was well thought out, well considered, and sneaking away in the middle of the night would have been so exciting and terrifying. But I mean, we saw Brad's reaction. Like, he was just so ready for this, like just living out this, you know, this amazing experience, and these advantages just keep falling out of the sky. So yeah, well yeah. played by him. I just wonder, like, how did Sydney just make a clean break? Like, yeah, did she just get away during the middle of the night and that boat just putted away?
I don't think that anyone like cares. I don't know. I've never been on Survivor, but you could say you're in the bathroom. Like, whenever they do these secret missions, like they've often done, like, you have to go to the other camp at night to win your advantage and like get it out of the other camp. And like, most people I've ever heard talk about that who are in the camp are like, I just assumed it was one of the many camera people. Like, I never would have thought anything. And same for this, like, they were gone. They were on a walk. I mean, Brad did say in his exit that they were more nervous because Sydney possibly wanted to get back quicker. And he had this like Brad Crow cover. But for me, I just feel like, I don't know, I just had like a really upset stomach. Instead of like, because if they ever find that the body is fake,
that would have been so good.
That will be a scene. Like, that, like, then you're out. Like, there's no way to cover for that. Like, that's D-Day if that happens.
I hope that Brad ticked off a bunch of his like new Survivor bucket list dream things and everything that he's done with, you know. Yeah. Like, he did achieve so much in such a short amount of time. Was it day 7?
Yeah, like, but even before that, with like the Spy Shack, like, he really did. He absolutely got it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about Brad's decision because I find it really interesting, and it's another thing that we as fans don't know. But what vote is he wagering? He doesn't know if he even has a vote at the next tribal council. We don't get a good sense of the note. We don't get to look at it. Sydney reads out your next vote at the next tribal council. So is it that Brad had no vote to wager because he doesn't even know if he has a vote at the next tribal council? Is it that whenever he gets his vote back, it would be gone? Because if he doesn't have a vote to wager, that kind of makes sense how he can come in and be like, hey, I don't even need to wager a vote. So like, the worst that this can be for me is that I get nothing. So I might as well go for the vote steal. And that's something that we spoke about in the Game Theory podcast that we did.
But how does this, layer up?
Well, that like that forces commitment that then, you know, you're the one who's going to do that. And then you kind of decide the outcomes for everyone else. It is a bit of an antisocial play if you're going to come out really strong with it. But there are ways to be like, I don't even have a vote to wager. So I'm going for the vote steal. And it does seem like there was kind of like a reciprocity there where, like, he told them, like, I might be on the outs, like, I kind of need this, and they were, like, happy to, again, socially give that to him. So I actually think Brad played the socially the best of the three of them. He obviously got what he wanted. He possibly wagered nothing. Like, he got a bit of an out there. So I like the decision as well, and I like it socially for him. Like, for the person who goes home in this episode, like, I thought he did the best of these three.
But what did he say? I'm just trying to look through my notes. He had this quote of being like, you know, high risk, high reward, you know, danger is everything. So I don't think that, like, I just don't even think that Brad's approach and Brad's strategy coming into the game, where he ever thought that playing something, or, you know, not taking an advantage was ever an option for him. You know, it's just like, you get one shot, you just got to get everything you can get your hands on and take it. And so I just, yes, it was a good read at the same time, but I just don't think that, he didn't even register the other side, the other option. Like, he loves the danger. He loves the high risk.
Yeah, it's interesting because he then says, like, going home with nothing would also be a risk. And it's like, well, if you have a vote to wager, you wouldn't be going home with nothing. You would be losing a vote. That's what makes me think possibly, like, he isn't necessarily wagering a vote. I mean, he doesn't know if Luvu were going to come the next day with an idol. So he could have a vote regardless. But I think this was unclear.
Yeah, look, I do need to acknowledge the fact that he did have that confessional where he did talk about the power of the TARP. He did talk about, you know, acknowledging, you know, the vote there. But yeah, I just think that he just couldn't see it going down another way, and he just runs with it. And that's really cool to see a player or a character do that.
Yeah, they never really even seem to put TARP on the table. Like, again, like, Tiffany opens by saying, like, at least one of us should have it. And again, like, if Brad has less to lose, then obviously it's going to be Brad. So that does kind of force an outcome where they're not going to go with the TARP. Because so basically in this not prisoner's dilemma, if I can put it in layman's terms, the first prisoner's dilemma that we had, not prisoner's dilemma, now I'm doing it.
Yes.
In the first social dilemma that we had in the first episode, there were three possible options. You could get an extra vote, that's the best. You could take the out, protect, do nothing. That's the middle. Or you could lose a vote. And so it was kind of this like mixed strategy. Here, there's a fourth option that comes in. So best case scenario, you get a steal a vote, you betray, and other people are betrayed and they collaborate and you get a steal a vote. Second best case scenario, you collaborate and you all get a tarp. That's all consistent with an actual prisoner's dilemma. But then the third and fourth are flipped. So in a prisoner's dilemma, the third best scenario would be that you both betray each other. And the fourth best scenario would be, well, the worst scenario would be that you are betrayed. So you collaborate and you are betrayed. Yes. In this situation, the third best scenario is that you are betrayed. So you collaborate, you get nothing. That's the out. And the fourth best scenario, the worst scenario, is that you betray each other and you all lose a vote. So in a prisoner's dilemma where you can have the first or third best option for risking and you can have the second and fourth best option for collaborating, that tends to risk because you can have better options. This was the first and fourth best option if you risked and the second and third best to collaborate. So it became a little bit more even, and then there were other strategies that could come in there because it was more of a balanced outcome. So that flips it, and that's what makes it different from the prisoner's dilemma. But I do think that it was really interesting. Like, there were so many social things that made it different from the first time as well. Like, obviously there's that extra thing where you could get a tarp. So even though there is the out where you can get nothing, which used to be the middle option, this, you can still have nothing, but it makes it seem worse because it pushes it down to the third or four options, if that makes sense. You can still take the out, but it's like you're giving up on two things, not just an extra vote, but a vote steal and a tarp to do it. You can still take the out, but it feels maybe more like a loss because it becomes three of four instead of two of three, if that makes sense. And there's so many other things. Like last week, you can discuss it, you can collaborate, and that to me lends itself more to collaboration. Like, let's be social.
Yeah,
like,
and
let's get a tarp.
That's where the opportunity is.
And that's what Evie did. And it's not like they got
to the bottom of the hill and went off their own different ways and didn't know what the dilemma was at the time. Like, they actually had a chance to collaborate there.
Yeah.
And it should have been a one person, like, they either go all tarp or someone goes, I need my vote. You guys take the steal. It should have worked that way.
I mean, it might be broken in the fact that, again, like, Brad's risking nothing, which means that the fourth worst option of losing his vote, actually, he the worst he can do is third best, so of nothing. So that changes it for him. So he might as well go for the vote steal. But I do think that last week they made it so that you can collaborate beforehand, so neither of you have to lose. And that's what Evie and Deshaun did. Here it was like, you can collaborate, so all of you can win something. And none of them chose to go for that. So I thought that was interesting. But I also think, like, three people over two means maybe you'll risk more because now you don't need 100% of your people to be betrayed. Like, two of you can actually win out, and you just need 50% of people to choose collaborate. So there's some interesting stuff there. I also think there's something interesting about the fact that they've been sent the last two times openly, and especially the first time when we didn't know what it was. That obviously context was provided for the second time, but the first time people were expecting something, so to come back with a lot of truth might have been necessary because, as we said, like, you're not coming back with rice, so you better be able to be pretty honest. Whereas this time it was at night.
Yeah, that's a good point.
People don't necessarily know. So you don't need to come back with something. As we're saying with Sydney, it might have been kind of awkward if she came back with something. So you have a little bit more, obviously, some people have told their allies, but more generally, like, you have more of a sense that you can risk something or take it out and not, like, be beholden to what the tribe think you're coming back with.
Yeah. And that's something I actually hadn't considered there, because that has happened and people have come back. And I think they're probably working out about now that votes are the social currency of this season. You know, you're either stealing them, getting them, losing them, and how that's going to impact the game. And especially at the start of this game, when there's such small numbers in the tribes, that's where the big questions are really coming from. I just wonder I would have loved to see what would have happened if Brad had lost his vote and then was still frozen out. What does that mean for him? Like, how long until, like, he can actually vote then if he doesn't get anything?
Isn't it crazy that Brad put his same vote on the line three times in this 140-minute episode? Like, he got on the boat, lost his vote. He went for the vote steal, technically could have lost his vote, and then he actually did lose his vote with the first beware advantage. Like, that vote was not making it out. If he could actually vote in this episode, it would have been miraculous. Like, so much needed to happen for him just to vote in this episode.
So I actually didn't realize in Sydney's confessional, she said, I have no option. I have to get on this vote because I cannot lose my vote. And that didn't even cross my mind that that's actually an option in itself to, do you actually get on the boat to go, or now that you've just got to go?
Yeah.
And What are, like, no, it wasn't like specified or anything, but do you think you could pass that advantage on?
I doubt it.
Like, do you think, well,
because they say, like basically if you open it, it's yours. Like, that's how you get locked into it. Because otherwise, I think she would have just been like, no. Like, yeah. At that point, you've been marked.
Yeah, it does say you have to do what it says, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Like, not getting yeah. on the
I was
boat.
Just thinking, because other advantages can be passed around at times.
Yeah, no, but this, like, this is a disadvantage. So I don't think know that yeah. you should be able to pass around, like, hey, here you go, like, birthday present. Like, I think that not getting on the boat, that would have been an unfortunate way to lose a vote, because other than, like, possible risk and social capital you might be expending by, like, just being gone, this mission was, again, so much easier than the first Beware Advantage, where it did, if you followed it to its natural conclusion, like, you could take the path that just gives you the full out, nothing happens, which is what both Sydney and Tiffany did. It's like, yeah, we went on a little adventure, and we didn't lose a vote, we didn't gain anything for the tribe. Like, the fact that it gives you an out, like the other social dilemmas have done, means that, yeah. like, it would have just sucked to not do that and to not get on the boat and lose your vote. When they, once you got to the island, it was like there are ways for you to be okay.
Okay, what happens if you now, one person doesn't get on the boat and you now only have two people at the advantage?
What if you had one? That's what I think they were scared of. I think, I'm not 100% sure. I think they knew, if it's just two people, then it just becomes a two-person dilemma. If they had one person, I don't know. I think they knew that people would get on the boat.
Yeah, losing your vote is big enough of a kick in the butt to be like, okay, don't fall asleep, get on the boat.
Yeah, I was watching with my husband. He's like, they should make it really scary. They should be like, all right, you got on the boat. Like, good job. Playing risky is the only way to play Survivor. One of the three of you are going home to side right now. Like, imagine if they
Whoa,
made it. Like,
yeah.
Imagine if they made like, man. That would be the monster. Like, that's a real big one. Like, obviously they shouldn't do that. But like, who knows at this point, because there's no like consistent metric of what Beware Advantage means. So the next person who gets on a boat, just beware of what is coming for you, because we have no way to measure this. And it is a scary thing. And like, part of that, as we're saying, like, okay, we wanted them to get on the boat. They probably thought that they could like bully them enough by taking away their vote to all get on the boat. Obviously, yeah. what they had to do was like hide it at their feet. Like, because people were mad about this, and I was definitely mad about it at the time. But I was more mad when I thought it was an advantage. Now that I know it was just a mission, I'm like, okay, that's a fine mechanism to be like, secret mission. But when I thought it was like,
people weren't happy about that at the time, were they?
Well, it's meant to be a hidden immunity idol. And I was like, well, it's not hidden. But then it also wasn't an immunity idol, so it was fine for me.
Yeah. And look, production needed it found that day, you know.
I think that's fine.
And I think you've got to make it that obvious to ensure that it does get found. But I think that's about as close as you're ever going to get to, you know, you hear the term like cameraman throwing idols at people. I think that's probably about as close as you'll
oh
get
my
to
God.
That.
I'm obsessed with that, because we spent the whole Australian Survivor season with people being like, idols are thrown at people. Like, these ones were literally at their feet. Like, this was like the most confirmation bias about, and it was for something different and it wasn't for an advantage, but it is actually funny after like all the conspiracy theories that they were like, hello, here you go. Here's this idol.
Hey, well, look,
here's this thing.
For the record, I don't believe that the idols are thrown at people.
I know.
And I found mine, like, fair and square. It was actually just a miracle that I found two so close together out there. But yeah, I feel like the disadvantage was about as close.
This is making
as
it look bad. This is, but like, it is. It's a mission, which is fine. It's okay for people to find missions.
I'm happy to let that one go through to the keeper.
Yes, yeah. I hope that the fans are as well, because it does look a little strange.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to. Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So let's talk about this actual vote if we can. We want to go to Uwa, which actually went to tribal council, which was shocking to me. I can't believe that Yasa actually got a win. Good job, Yasa. What are you thinking about these dynamics? Because again, like, Shan is the central figure. Shan is so tied to every single person that it's a win, obviously. That's amazing. But then there's like this loss to it, which is like you will be getting rid of an ally because you are aligned to everyone.
Yeah, she's so good. So she's put herself in a great position. She has Rattard is going to her as her number one. Brad's going to her as her number one, and JD's going to her as her number one. We haven't really seen too much of Shan's relationship with Jeannie, but I think that Jeannie probably thinks, because there was that secret scene about them cooking kind of thing. So like they do seem to be quite close as a they do seem to be quite close as a tribe. And I mean, I think she's playing really well in terms of, like, you know, she comes to life in her confessionals, but she's also very genuine, you know, in them. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, acting or playing it up. It's just like where she's being able to be passionate and then really talk about what's going on. But then in and around camp and with her other people, she's so well, she's very calculated about the people she's around and how she needs to be reacting there. But it was a really raw moment where she was, you know, where she broke down and was like, I don't want to send one of my friends home, essentially. And she's going to have to do that. And then you've got Rattard there, who was very, very calm and collected and put the, you know, almost the, put it all out on the table, being like, we need to choose one of these. And it's almost like your decision. And, you know, I would like to see a little bit more about what went on there, because I do feel like it was Shan who was in that position who ultimately made the decision for Brad to go home.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I credit her agency there. I do think, though, Rickard did super well coming to her with, like, a lot of rationality, but also, like, hearing her out. And also the fact that Rickard seemed to be a little bit on the bottom with Sarah and has now, like, worked his way up to, I think, like, legitimately being Shan's number one at this point. Like, they had, last week they said to each other, we're each other's number one, but I didn't really buy it from Shan. Rickard's telling us that in confessional. And now I think it could actually be true. And possibly it's just that he, like, didn't screw it up the same way that Brad was a bit erratic and JD was a bit erratic, and he's just been like more reliable to her. But like, good on him for getting to that position. But I thought that this was scarily similar to the dynamics of last week for me. Like, we had another 5-person tribe where we have this like one central figure, Shan or Evie, connected to everyone, the decision maker, like working to assure the longevity of their number one, either Rickard here or Liana. I think that Liana and Evie are more obvious too, but as I said, like, I like the way that Rickard and Shan were working together here. And then I think that you've got an erratic person on the side, like an erratic individual, which is Tiffany or JD. And the same way I thought last week, like, you can't get rid of Tiffany, because then you're like assuring yourself this three with either Voce and Xander, or here, Brad and Jeannie, then you'll be a third to that, and you'll either have Rickard going next in this situation, or you would have had Liana going next last week. So that is a non-starter to me, that you would put them so on the side. So the fact that you could have this like middle pair with an erratic third going in that direction and splitting up the other pair of Voce and Xander and Brad and Jeannie, and the fact that one of the people in those pairs has lost all of their power, but if they get it back, will have an idol, their own vote, and an additional vote, which is literally the exact same amount of power other than it being an extra vote and a vote steal, versus someone who has nothing in Jeannie or Voce. I was like, is this not like exactly the same dynamics as last week?
It's the same dynamic, but then this week, Brad goes, and Brad is obviously the Xander. So if it had been like an absolute duplicate of it, it would have been Jeannie going home.
It would have been Jeannie. I mean, I think that the most similar thing is that you can't take out JD. Like, that's the thing to me that speaks to, like, that's just a structural dynamic that is the same. That is Rickard and Liana on the side. Like, so the same way I was like, oh, you definitely can't take out Tiffany last week. Like, for me, that structural similarity is here, where you can't take out JD because Rickard would then just be next to go. And then Shan, who's been the absolute center, would somehow be a third with Brad and Jeannie, which would feel like kind of losing the lead a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that even though Shan was very emotional about her decision, I do think it was a no-brainer for her.
Yeah.
Like, I do feel like she, you know, would come around pretty quickly there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really agree that Ricardo's done a great job to cement himself as Shan's number one. So that was really cool. But I think that was also helped by the fact that, and obviously Brad being, also being, you know, a little bit erratic, like, yeah, you know, running around with his spy shelter thing.
Mm.
But then also JD, just with his sloppy play, like, he shot himself in the foot there, and, you know, but it was just enough to, you know, be in with Shannon. And then she realized, being with Shannon, she realized that, you know, JD was going to be, you know, of more use when Shannon has JD in her pocket than, you know, what Jeannie or Brad would be. So, yeah, I think that was just a really great read. And, yeah, I think it was a no-brainer for Shan.
Yeah, it's a hard one because JD was sloppy, but then I loved coming back and giving her or handing her. I think they talked about a know-it-all. It is confusing to me whether she actually has that extra vote, like if she has the power over it, because it's like at first, like, she's like handed to me to hold, and it's like, well, it doesn't feel like you've kind of actually given ownership of it. But then later they say, like, oh yeah, he gave me, or he's given me this thing. So I'm like, did he give it or did he hand it? That's different to me.
In Survivor, if it leaves your hands, like if you pass it over regardless of how it's done, I feel like that's out of your hands now. Like, that's been passed on to someone else.
But, like, there was a famous example where, like, Sarah Lucina handed it to Saree, and Saree tried to use it against her in Game Changes, and then it was, like, non-transferable. I feel like that's another question. Like, there was another question around that, like, does she have it? But I don't know, like, even if she has it, like, I've seen a lot of, like, conversation around, vote him out, you have an advantage. She's like, yeah, but it's an extra vote. Are you voting out an ally for an extra vote? Can I go on again about how useless extra votes are?
Yeah, like, even if she has it and can play it, she's not going to. She realizes she doesn't need to. And, you know, you also do keep JD in your pocket. Like, you keep him there. You've got a close ally with him. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, for an idol, again, I wouldn't actually give up the structure that they have where she's so in the center. But for an extra vote, can you imagine, like, it would be so useless to vote out someone to keep their extra vote. And then that extra vote will do nothing. And then you've just lost an ally, yeah.
Shannon, how do you feel about these extra votes?
I'm not into it. That's another difference about the new mission versus the old ones, because it's a vote seal, which has actually affected votes before. Not technically, numerically. It would have, but just because you play it before the votes, it breaks the vote open, most famously in David versus Goliath, where it actually affected the vote. So having an advantage that has in the past actually affected things, like, that's a legitimate prize. And that becomes, like, that also affects the mission for me, based on the, yeah, other non-prisoner dilemmas that we've had. But I think as well, like, so if Jeannie and Brad are Voce and Xander, and last week I praised Evie for keeping Xander, I honestly think either one would have been fine. I just thought, like, you definitely can't vote Tiffany. Like, what do you think about not keeping Brad here with all his power, the same way Evie kind of kept Xander around to possibly use that power and trust? And maybe, like, you know, do you take out Jeannie here and keep Brad around? And that's a more similar decision than what was made last week.
Oh, I think it is a little bit different because I don't think that Jeannie has a close relationship with Shan versus, like, you know, Evie was, you know, almost in that three at the start with Xander and Voce.
Mm.
So I because that existed there, I do think it just slightly changes it. But I do feel like I do think she made the right decision here because of Brad's, like, erratic play and just, you know, playing so hard. Like, that's danger to me. But now you're going into almost a 3-1 with maybe what Jeannie on the outside. So I don't know, like, mm-hmm. you know, are they, it depends what kind of relationships Jeannie has there. Is she going to be able to create a 2-2 in the, you know, in the next? But we didn't hear from Jeannie at all, which was, like, the only part we got of her was Brad, who can't vote, telling Jeannie that all four of us are voting for JD. It's that simple. So that was, like, the only kind of interaction we had there. And she was just, what we as the audience, are just left to assume that she's okay with that and that's the plan.
Yeah, the Jeannie thing is interesting because Jeannie actively votes incorrectly. And last week, it was a unanimous vote. Xander couldn't vote, but again, we felt he was like really included on that. We'll have to get confirmation in some of the exits, but we felt that he was brought in, and I really backed Evie on that. And in this way, I feel like there might have been a personality difference that Jeannie and Brad seemed really tight. I'm not sure that either one of them could have been brought into the four of sacrificing each other. So if that's true and you've really left Jeannie out, which clearly they have done, or on the other side, you would have really left Brad out and you can't bring him into a Jeannie vote, then I do actually think cut the person with all the power, because then I feel like, all right, if he gets it all back, it's coming back on you, where I felt like Evie did a good enough job that if Xander gets it all back, like it would still be the fringe player Tiffany who suffers and not Evie who made that decision.
Yeah, I agree. I think that... I think that Shan and Ricard's decision to vote out Brad is really leaving them in a 3-1.
As opposed to
an edgy 4, which could, you know, that could really, like, that's a dangerous spot to be. So I think they're kind of lining up a simple next vote for them. Look, when you say simple, that's when the scary things happen. So who knows?
Yeah, I feel like alienating Jeannie and leaving like someone so on the outs where they voted incorrectly, because they were all going to pile on JD. Like that was, even in the three that Brad, Jeannie and Shan have, like Ricard was brought into that. So there was like some uniformity there that would have been good. But I just think like structurally, you just can't vote JD out. So you're going to have to alienate one of Jeannie and or Brad at this point.
And I can't see Jeannie turning around to be like, oh, well, JD, I'm sorry, I put your name down last night, but now why don't we form a 2 to go against, you know, Ricard and Shan, when JD can be like just in that 3 and just, you know, that would probably get him through to a merge or something. So, you know, it's not a merge, a tribe swap. I think it's the right decision for, Shan and Ricard to make there.
Like, obviously he has the extra votes, so it's something he numerically could do, but it's the kind of thing that you think about in like chess pieces, like, hey, they're the clear 2. We have an extra vote, like, let's be a 3. But it's like, is there a relationship there? Like, she literally just voted against him, whereas Shan made the choice to save him. Like, he would see, like, Shan, like, just has them all in her pocket, especially JD at this point, that I feel like it's an obvious 3, and Jeannie is on the outs of that. So, similar structures to last week, I think, in a really fascinating way, but I think it's that personality difference of, hey, Xander, we can kind of, like, keep on a leash, keep as a pet, keep his power for our own, and try and, like, really just, like, manage that situation versus, like, oh, if we vote out one of Brad or Jeannie, like, the other one might go nuclear. Like, let's make sure that nuclear person doesn't have the potential for all of these advantages. So I think that probably lent into that decision, but... yeah, I feel like there was a lot of similarities here. I was like, am I going crazy that this is like a very, very similar dynamic?
No, it was.
I was like, copy and paste the podcast.
Do you think that there ever would have been a scenario where JD would have had to play his advantage there? Because I don't think I can see it.
Well, not JD, because JD is either going out 4-1, in which, well, 3-1, I guess, because Brad doesn't have the vote. So 3-1, the extra vote doesn't help. Or he's in the majority, which he was. But the vote still, can we talk about this? Because we got this question on Twitter from Kay Breezy, who said, could Brad / Jeannie have won on Jeannie's one vote and the vote still? So this is how that would work. So Jeannie would steal Ricard's vote, okay? Brad can't vote. So her 2 votes go on JD. JD and Shan, not Ricard, his vote's been stolen, vote for Brad. Now it's 2-2. Now, we still don't know, and as I said, Brad doesn't even know if the vote steal carries through the revote, but Stephen has said and continues to say on Know It Alls that for his vote steal, it would. When it happened in Australian Survivor at the Benji vote, it would have carried. The problem was that Shawnee stole Sean's vote, and Sean was the voted person who wouldn't actually have a vote on the revote, and that's why it didn't carry. But the mechanism is it should carry. So if that's the case, then yes, on the revote, Brad can't vote, A, because he's a voted person, B, because he has no vote. So they've doubled up on that lack of vote, which is how that's numerically interesting. JD can't vote because he's a voted person. Ricard can't vote because his vote's been stolen. Jeannie votes twice for JD. Shan votes once for Brad. JD goes home. There is an extra vote, obviously, but I think you can only play that on the first vote, and the extra vote doesn't carry. It didn't carry an Australian Survivor, and I don't think carries at all because it's a useless advantage. So at that point, that actually would have worked. And it's interesting because Brad said in his ex interview that he was really nervous. He didn't know Shan was with him. And he's like, but the math wouldn't work because if we stole JD's vote, we'd lose on the revote. It's like, yeah, if you stole JD's vote, because then he would be a voted person and it wouldn't carry. But if you stole Ricard's vote, it would have worked. And he said it in both the exit interviews with Rob and Mike. And I was like screaming at my phone being like, no, but if but Ricard's vote and the math, it actually works. And again, like, seriously, like the Kay Breezy on Twitter, like, got out the proper whiteboard. Like, it works, Brad. And like, I can't believe the math is how this didn't work out.
You definitely need a visual. You definitely need an old chart to follow that. But yeah, it was plausible. But okay, the thing that jumped out at me there, if Brad in his exit said he didn't trust Shan fully, was just a little bit unsure.
Yeah, he said that he
why no like shot in the dark?
He can't play shot in the dark because he doesn't have a vote. You have to pay your vote. Yeah, he and Xander and all of them who lose their votes can't pay for their shot in the dark.
Because you pay with with your vote.
Yeah. So that's why that's how much they've lost. And like, he also can't use the vote steal, which he'd have to give it to Genie to use. But that doesn't make sense to me. Like, I get, so what they did in the terminology of the first Beware Advantage was they don't say you lose your vote. They said you can't vote, which was a more blanket terminology. But I do think if you should be able to vote steal, take it away from someone, it would become more of a vote block. But then you can't vote because you can't vote. But you should be able to still steal the vote. Like, that's different to you voting. Yeah. None of this really makes sense. But it does kind of kill me that if he were nerfed, like, fine. You didn't realize at the time, or you were, like, a little bit blindsided, which he says he wasn't. But, like, the dynamics didn't work out for you to know that the vote steal actually could have numerically worked here. And, like, compounded some really interesting stuff happening with the fact that his vote was lost, but he is the voted out person. Doesn't get a vote on the revote anyway. That's fine that you couldn't work that out at the time, but like the fact that in the exit still you don't know, it's killing my soul. Like, you have to know by now that it could have worked, please. Like,
but, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, if he was to actually go through and play that steal, you know, steal a vote for, you know, or Genie plays for a card or whatever, like, that's a lot of trust that you're potentially breaking if you don't need to. Like, because Brad.
Well, that is what he said. He was like, well, no, he said it wouldn't work, so no point spoofing everyone. But the misnomer there is that it could have worked. Yeah, exactly.
It would have worked, yeah.
It's an anti-social move. Like, had Chan been on your side, you've obviously used an advantage that you didn't need to, and you've, like, been, like, extremely aggressive in that approach, maybe severed that relationship forever. But, like, he said he was nervous. It's like, honestly, if he came on the exit and said, I know it was possible, but honestly, I was just too blindsided, or I trusted Chan, I just didn't want to take the risk in our relationship, I'd be like, fair enough. But it's the fact that he came on and said, I just can't. Brad, if you're listening.
Well, and he's also probably had time to think about that.
Yes!
You know? And he could have done one of those classic, I now know so much more now that I've had months and months to think about my decision and my eviction, as opposed to, you know, that interview where you actually get kicked off straight away and then you try to work out what actually just happened. That's good.
Sometimes I do exits, not yours, but there's some others that come to mind and someone will tell me something and they'll still have it wrong and I'll be like, it's been 3 months. Like, in my, I can't say it because that's not good interview style, but like in my head, I'm like, no.
I would love to see extended exit interviews at the time where people have actually been booted. Like, I think they need to do it like when you're out on the ground, when it's all raw, as opposed to when how you feel at the time, as opposed to when you actually see all the other dynamics and stuff. And you've got time to, I don't know, I feel like some people have the opportunity to adjust some stories or some facts or some knowledge along the way, which will always happen. But I think that's, you know, we see some of those things in Jury Villa where, you know, you get those raw moments of people going, oh, you know, what was your favorite move or what was your best bit here or there? And not knowing what actually went down, like that's really cool.
Yeah.
And you hear him talk about it later, they're like, "Oh, I knew everything." Like,
no, but they don't, Simon. That's the point. It's like they're still 3 months later, like numerically. I'm like, just do the math. And no, it is complicated. It's not easy. You need to do it. You need to write it out for sure. But like when you get a pen and paper, like start counting some vote skills because there was some stuff that could have happened here that actually would have worked out. It's just that even when like Rob asked him, "Well, does it carry in the revote?" He's like, "Yeah, I didn't get that far." And that's the issue. Like I paused on the note, being like, surely you're going to talk about if it carries through the revote. And the note literally doesn't even say. So obviously a player like Steven has gone out and like found that information because he had a vote deal and Brad didn't necessarily
There would be so many moments like that, you know, if you're in a position like that, take the time in your confessional to like
write in the
talk to the producer, whoever's there like interviewing you and being like, I'm not leaving until I have an answer on exactly what this means for me. Like, it's so important just to get that information there to know exactly what the implications are.
It's just like, yeah, it's been 3 months. Like, because he's like, if I stole JD's vote, then yeah, like, Ricard and Shan will vote you out. So, like, isn't the next natural step to think, like, well, what if we stole Ricard's vote? Like, anyway.
Yeah, you don't need
something to think about. Thank you, Key Breathing Twitter, so for the proper whiteboard. Got it out, Jeff Probst style.
To wrap that up then, the only way that, that maybe Brad, if you didn't want to, like, you know, break up that or test that relationship or anything there, it might have actually worked better in Brad's favour if he hadn't have been as close to Shan.
Yeah.
Like, if it had been more of a divided tribe, then that may have come into more of a play, and he might have actually, you know, seen that. But, you know, I think the fact that he, you know, had that relationship there and he's still, you know, you do need to trust someone. Yeah, it was weird enough to just throw him off completely.
I do agree socially. Again, after the fact, get the pen and paper out. But, like, I do agree socially. Like, if he knows he and Genie are definitely on the bottom, maybe more time is spent to be like, hey, what do we have? What can we do? Let's think about every permutation of this, possibly. But, like, the fact that, like, he still thought Chan might have been on his side, he just wasn't 100% sure. So, like, snowing it in that kind of way and having, like, that vagueness and having that connection, like, that does put a blanket possibly on, like, really talking it out. Although in saying that, it has been 3 months and still to this day, or however many months. but I do think, like, there's a social aspect. I don't want to, like, ride Brad too hard on this. He did well in the episode. He was doing a lot. He was absolutely, like, putting himself out there in every single way. It just pains me for him that there was a way out here and he doesn't know that it was possible. I think Brad was great. Like, it's been said a lot. Like, he was a really fun pre-merge character. As you said, like, ticked the bucket list in three episodes of the show and was so fun. The broccoli stuff was completely hilarious and so bad to the point where they should not have activated it. Like, if I was Brad and I said that and, like, looked over to production to be like, production should be shaking their head, like, nah, Brad.
No, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, man, that would be so stressful being on the mat there and trying to, like, force a conversation or, you know, force something like that in there where, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but, oh, he definitely tripped over his own feet. I think that it kind of added to the beautiful bizarreness of this advantage or this beware advantage, because, yeah, I am loving it. And, I have big questions now on, you know, what happens if they never rehide Brad's beware advantage and it just goes back, or, you know, and now Xander, is he just stuck in Neverland? Like, what?
Yeah. There's three options. The first is it's dead. All of them are dead and Xander doesn't get to vote till the merge. The second is Brad somehow terribly activated it so it's done. As long as Luvu say their phrase, then the next tomb can move forward. And the third, which I think most people are leaning to, is just that, like, it'll just get re-hidden on that beach and someone else will find it and they will open it, even if they know how bad it's been, because that's what I've learned about humans in this episode, is that they'll still open it. So,
well, now, it'll be now everyone knows, and I'd say that, you know, it's probably going to be, it shouldn't be too far away that Lulu find their advantage. Like, I'd say now you kind of know what the implications are. Like, you could be there. Xander's still going to say his butterfly thing. Lulu now says the goat's on AstroTurf. And then if you know where that advantage is, or the beware advantage, like, you can then go pick that up and then take it and then say it at the challenge and run with it from there. So I think that the rehiding is probably going to be the most likely. I can't see them just dropping it completely, considering just how much of the time and storyline has been put into.
It's been funny though. Yeah, like, even if it never ever activates an idol, like, it's definitely brought, like, some hilarious TV moments. Like, definitely Xander saying, like, I like what you said about broccoli is, like, an all-time funny quote to me. Like, just put that in, like, out of context, hilarious comment.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that they were just sitting on the platform in the end waiting to go swimming. It was captured there. Like, you know, just a nice little nod there. Yeah, I feel for them both getting screwed over like that. Like, that's it's hard, but you know what? You bring it on yourself, like opening something that says beware.
Beware. But again, there's no consistent metric to what beware means anymore. But it is wild that we're going into a fourth episode of US Survivor and there are no active idols in the game. Like, that
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Look, quick side note. Like, I remember sitting on the couch like the night after I found my two idols and then Laura finds an idol, and I'm like, there's too many idols.
There are too many idols in this game.
No,
but Simon,
too much.
Your second idol was the one that was too much. Like, it's fine for the beach, for each camp to have an idol. Like, the fact that you got one at reward, like, I'm happy that that you were the one who benefited, but then didn't benefit from it. But like, that was the one where it was like, no, why is it now like an addition? And because then they also hit it at the challenge. So those
what happens
like,
if I had? I could have had three.
I know
I could
you,
have
you,
had
you
three
could have
in
had
my
three.
Hand at one time.
And even you should know that that's not okay.
No, two. I'm like two. I'm like, this is too many. Like, even having two is too many. Like, it's not okay. But,
I would love you to sit in your confessionals with production and be like, if you had three idols and be like, look, thank you.
Guys.
But this is too like, I want to give one up for the cause.
Someone comes down, like, taps you on the shoulder and be like, oh, we're going to need this one back.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, the fact that you could have had three. Like, they had one at your camp you found. They had one at reward you found. They had one at a challenge that you had the capacity to get. What? No. It's just three idols for one person. Yeah. Like, your own beware advantage, but all for you. And you didn't even have to talk about broccoli.
And look, I think we saw a couple of... And no clues either.
No clues.
But I think we've seen a lot of... like, there's a lot of talk already around people looking for idols, people looking for advantages. And look, it's great. And I know how powerful they are and it changes the game. But I would like to see... Just a little bit more of that old school kind of, you know, social dynamic, those social relationships forming, and you kind of give us an indication of, you know, who sits where in the tribe, and when you're playing the numbers as opposed to just these advantages and just the idols and stuff like that. So yeah, it is, I don't know, it's just different, but
yeah, it's so tough.
I hope they find the right balance over the rest of the season.
It's really hard with 42 minutes, like. Even Survivor South Africa has 55 at worst, and then you can spend a few minutes on Immunity Island and you'll still get the camp stuff, although people wanted more of the personal content. But, like, you'll hear from the players and you'll definitely get the strategy. Whereas with this, it just feels like it stresses me out coming from the international franchises because it is so little time and they need to be so economical and, like, everything needs to have, like, such extreme meaning. And, like, it really better be worth the time, and so much is going to these things, but they're just so strapped for time. Like, to the point, like, Luvu, because they continue to win, like, Erica and Heather are not on the show at this point. Like, it's sad for them. I think that Erica had two confessionals episode one, Heather had one, zero since, because everything we get from Luvu is just around, like, Nasir's in, Nasir's out, Nasir's in, and, you know, he shakes it all about. And that's all we know from Luvu. And
is it Luvu or Lulu?
Luvu, like, love you.
I think I've been calling it Lulu. I've got Lulu written down here on my notes.
Well,
so
that's
obviously
fine because we don't see this tribe. We got, like, a little bit last week with the secret theme. Like, what are you thinking about this? Because everything we got from the dynamics this week with them was that Nasir has spoken to Sydney about taking out Danny, Sydney has told the rest. So that's where we're at.
So. I added, like, last week, I added Nasir to my top three picks.
I had
Shan and Danny and Nasir were, like, my three for the season. So I've got Danny, I do have a little bit of a soft spot for, like, the potential alpha male. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see a big, strong player kind of go on. So, yes, like, Danny's in there. Shan, I just loved her energy and how... just how well she navigated, the tribe at the start and had everyone kind of corralling around her. That was really cool. I'm like, look, I'm looking forward to seeing these two. Ironically, that I've got Shannon and Danny are the two that I'm cheering for. Two people who are very much so against me in our
maybe that's the trauma of it. I mean, I do want to say with Shan, like, Shan having half my name, like, I'm claiming it for the namesake. Like, great, great Survivor Shan, like, fully into it.
I think you did that without Shannon as well.
Well, I'm not very used to having Survivor Shannons and definitely not good ones. Survivor New Zealand had a good one. We've got good Shan here. We've had a good one on your season. But before that, it was Shambo and Shannon Elkins who, look, it's not been a good run for me in terms of Survivor Shannons, but it's been a good year for me in terms of Survivor Shan and Shannon.
I think both Shan and Shannon are great players. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Shan delivers. And yeah, I think Shannon was great, and I really liked getting along with her and spending time out there. But then Nasir, like, he was my other pick there. And I think in the first episode over at Luvu. Like, that was really cool to see, you know, the underdog. Like, that's why I threw him in there, where he is, you know, from a, he's Sri Lankan, different background to everyone else on the tribe, potentially could be seen as a bit of an outcast without, you know, being as able to easily fit in as the rest of them. But then he's just shown how valuable he can kind of be and around camp. And I'm like, wow, like, that's a really cool, a connection to be able to share with your tribe mates. And you see Sydney being like, oh, you know, this is really cool. Like, you know, maybe we're gonna need him around for a little bit. Like, he's going to be helpful. And then obviously Nasir tells Sydney that, you know, that what he wants to get Deshaun out.
Danny and then out, he wants and to then get keep that, well, around.
Didn't he want to get Danny Deshaun out? Didn't he say that last week?
Said like he was going for, also week one, he said Deshaun and Danny are looking for idols. This week he said, let's take out Danny, like, biggest threat. And then he said we can kind of, like, keep Deshaun sweet at that point because he'll have nowhere to go.
Yeah, but he's already said that he's
skeptical of both of their names. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's thrown both of their names out. And then, you know, Sydney's actually taken a really great opportunity here to be able to, I mean, obviously tell Danny and then almost form the rest of the tribe, form a common enemy. Nasir kind of being on the out. So that was a little bit heartbreaking for me to see my underdog there kind of get pushed to the side. Like I would have loved to see him like really really kind of get in there and mix it up and, you know, break some stereotypes. But yeah, I think we'll just have to wait and see. But I the other thing that we got from Luhu was then Sydney saying that when she found that advantage, she said, I need this.
Yeah,
and I think that was a really telling sign.
Agreed. That was a really interesting thing because we've only seen in the secret scenes that Heather's on the outs or that Heather and Sydney have anything bad. And then we have a confessional from Sydney saying, I just needed to take it before Nasir or Heather got it. But that to me informed even more so, like, so Nasir, I love him, but he obviously has misread Sydney badly. She's aligned definitely to Deshaun. We see them together all the time. And it seems like with Danny as well, it seems like it's a four with them three and Erica with Heather and Nasir. Like, probably if they ever went to a tribal council, which is something I doubt, because again, they can sit out two people per challenge. And they're very, very strong and they haven't been penalized in any way since, like,
and the same people can sit on the bench.
Yeah, like, because it's episodic. Yeah. So they're in a really good spot. But if they ever go to tribal council, I'm sure the dynamic would be Heather or Nasir from the four making the decision. So Nasir has completely misread that. But then I felt like this was really sloppy from Sydney to A, say it in a big group loudly. Obviously, Heather is there and we know that Sydney and Heather from the secret scene have a bad relationship and Heather's a bit on the outs. Like, I don't know if much can really be done about it because it seems like she isn't a type four, but like you've sent Nasir off. So now he's maybe like looking for idols more. Like he knows he's on the bottom. You haven't maintained that double agent role well, but you were in that position because he was speaking to you. And you've also, like, alienated him badly if you ever get to a swap and need him. You've given Heather some information when you have a bad relationship. Like, I just don't understand why she was sitting there loudly talking about it on the beach. Like, surely that's, like, you use that information, but you do it in, like, private conversations, like, with your close people, not just like, hey, guys, here's, like, the topic of the day. Then Nasir said that.
Yeah. Well, and I was trying to think, like, did she do that in front of Heather to
bring her in?
Yeah. And to kind of almost maybe unite Heather against Nasir? Like, that was probably the only thing that I
guess, but, like, in that, because she even said, like, she said that he said, made a negative comment about Heather as well. So it would do that, but it just felt to me like, clearly Nasir picked up on it, which is not a good thing. Likely you will swap or merge, possibly needing him. I mean, it looks like they're going to try throw a challenge. That was what we were seeing on the next time on. So, but the fact that you feel you need to do that, that it's so negative socially, you know, that's not a good thing. Like, we talk a lot about, like, the intentional map thing, which is basically to lose a lot of challenges so that you come into a merge with, like, very few numbers and kind of no one looks at you. I think I saw a tweet from Peridium being like, oh, they're doing the intentional Tandang, which is the opposite. And that's a tribe that wins a bunch, never goes to tribal council, sits on their feelings, is never able to get it out, just is ready to destroy each other, gets to emerge with all the numbers, and then just comes for each other because they have had no release to all the negative energy. And I'm kind of obsessed with that idea because Luhu might be in that situation. I think Nasir will jump ship. I think Heather and Sydney will come for each other. Like, I see this tribe, even if they have the numbers, like, they're not necessarily in the best spot for win potential because it's like, have they really acted on it? Like, sometimes it's good to just get it out and go to tribal council and fight about it. And I even spoke about this on a deep dive recently from Survivor South Africa. It was like, once they kind of fought it out at tribal council, like, they came back to better energy, and Luva were just, like, sitting on it right now, and it might be getting a little negative.
No line in the sand. Yeah, yeah. There's tensions there.
Dynamics.
There's always
never
something
defined
to be said about, yeah, extra time in the game, but, like, that can also be very dangerous as well. Like, but the dynamics do change over time, but, I mean, they don't have a lot of time as a whole. I mean, statistically, yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, more numbers when you get to those mergers and swaps and stuff like that. Like, that's when, you know, typically it's better to, like, yes, you may have some fractions within your own tribe, but then it's like, hey, Matik, I don't have any of these people. Like, you know, like, I'd rather work with them than other people. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one to be like, we have numbers. We've spent so much time together. We were on a tribe, but, like, we've never voted together. Like, we've never done this active thing together. We've voted together less. But, like, certainly, like, with Tendang, it's like, we've never voted together. We've never shown where we stand. Like, all we have is time, but, like, nothing really definitive. So I think there is something really interesting there, to the point where they're saying they might throw a challenge, which, as we're saying, there might be some merit to, because this might not be going well. And all I can say to that is, sorry for traumatizing you like that. Like, you know, on next week, and that also would have been somewhat relevant.
But if they throw, like, do you think it's going to be Luva that throws the challenge?
I think that's what they want to do. Like, Danny was saying, like, he really doesn't want, like, in the next time on, he said that's, like, a sin to an athlete. But it seems like someone, maybe Sydney, maybe sort of, like, into that idea. But
thinking about it. Well, do you think, like, they could end up with a 5-1 to, you know, against other Nissi? I think Nissi is probably more on the bottom in the story that's been told to us than Heather. But they could end up with, like, a 5-1.
Yeah.
And then what does that really solve?
Well, I guess Nissiya, because they've been sloppy about it, is probably jumping ship. So they're taking out someone who would be actively against them, but they shouldn't have let it get to that point. But as we're saying, it can be quite difficult when you don't get to ever release the tension with the tribal council. If they take out Nissiya, the biggest loser would be the show, because I feel like Nissiya is the breakout. Like, I was with my in-laws last night, and they were saying they love Nissiya. Like, I'm sure Nissiya is having, like, such an impact on people. People are just like... And then, like, when Sydney was coming for Nissiya, people were like, no. Like, it was very much that meme of, like, holding Nissiya back and, like, pointing. Like, I feel like the show, if Nissiya doesn't make the merge, it would be, like, a very big character loss for the show.
It'd be hard.
Yeah.
I hope it's not the case. But
it's not in a great spot.
I don't know. This early in the game, like, I don't think there should be any reason to be throwing challenges. Like, you... Like, those bonds that, like, even if you don't, if you dislike someone, I still think you might have a chance of a potential relationship when it comes to a tribe swap. Because what happens if you end up with, you know, four people that you're not going to be able to, I don't know, work against, and then you're forced to be, I don't know, Luvu strong or, you know, something like that. And then you've kind of got no option. Like, or, you know, it just, I just think if you can, you know, if you can get through by just winning challenges, just keep doing that. I think that's always going to be a better decision. So I am really looking forward to next week's app to see how they kind of go about it, because, the throwing challenges definitely kind of came up in my season a couple of times, and I was on the raw end of the stick there. And then the other thing that I'm looking forward to is, and the question I had for you, who do you think finds the advantage on the Luva tribe?
Nissiya, probably, right? Like, because he's got the most reason to look.
It would be awesome. Yeah. And people...
Unless Brad Going has made it redundant, in which case he just loses the vote.
No,
in which case it would be very not
that.
Awesome.
I can't invest so much time and then it's redundant. I'm too invested. And I want to see Xander. Like, what? Someone's going to be like, hey, Xander, don't say the butterfly thing again. Like, you know, I want to see him squirm and try work it in for a third time.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to be like... I mean, two times is a stretch. But Xander, if he has to say it for a third time, would just be... Oh, man, that's going to, it'll be awkward viewing, and I'm all for it.
Well, Nasir is already saying, like, English is my second language, and, like, using that strategically in his apology for, like, how he, like, actively came out with a name. And, like, I feel like he could use that really well. He'd be like, what's that saying that you Americans say, that you're more confused than a goat on AstroTurf? And everyone would be like, no one ever says that. And he'd be like, oh, my mistake, picked it up somewhere. Like, he could really work with it. But in terms of, like, throwing challenges, like, it means a lot, because it also means you're losing your flint. You're not going to get reward because they've all been combined. So, like, that's something else to think about. Like, you might lose one challenge, and now you can only sit out, they're at four. So you'd still be sitting out one person, but now you can sit out less. Like, you might lose one and then keep losing. So it's hard to kind of get on that road in these small tribes where the physicality is so important. I would be a little reticent. I would just not alienate Nasir to the point where you need to throw a challenge and give up rewards and flint to get rid of him. But we may be past that point. So I hope, I've got my fingers crossed that we've got Nasir talking about goats next week. And that it would still be live, even with Brad gone. So that's interesting. I feel like this was the least we've seen from Yasa because they actually won. We basically got nothing. It was all around Tiffany and the mission. The one thing I had is like from the very first scene with Liana, I wanted to be like, Liana, cut yourself some slack. Like this 20-year-old girl, she's so impressive. Like you're in the middle of the tribe, which is improbable in like often like male dominated early games. You're doing great. You won the fishy last week. You got chizzy points. Like it was a good vote. It's fine. Like I think that she was mostly upset about losing the advantage that Tiffany picked up because she says it completely slipped through my fingers last night. And that was said to be about the Xander vote. But to me, that was like a pretty clear Frankenbite where I thought that must have been about the advantage. So maybe all of that
And the episode was called What My $1 Million Mistake, and that was her line.
You're fine. You know what Tiffany got out of that? Like, nothing.
This is the best place you want to be in. Yeah. Like you've got the... You know who's got it. You know what it is. You found the shit. You know, Tiffany found it in front of you. Like, she's going to have to pass on the information. You don't have any of the implications of the beware side of it. Like, this is good. This is good. It's okay. Please don't cry.
Yeah. All Tiffany got was a negative relationship with Sydney. She went with the out, projected her vote, all fine. Like, this isn't your $1 million mistake, Liana. In fact, you're doing great. Like, I just wanted to reach out through the TV and be like, girl, you're okay. It's good. You're doing well. But, like, but I appreciated it. I appreciated how much care she has for the game and how hard she is on herself, I guess, because I'm the same like that. Maybe I should, like, I'm going to try to talk to myself like how I would talk to Liana. Like, it's okay. Because I can be the same. But, like, she needed to, like, just know that you're doing great. And they said the same on No It All. Like, she won the fishy and she comes back crying. That is a woman with high standards for herself.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I said earlier, she's putting a lot of pressure on herself. And, you know, I can relate. And it's hard, but you've just got to be, you just got to adapt and make it work as best you can for yourself. But, you know, it's still hard out there when you don't have, you know, support of people around you, and you think you're making friends and relationships, and you know you may or may not be. So it's tough.
Yeah.
The other one I wanted, while we're talking about Yazi, would Xander have been the next to go if they had lost that tribal? Or sorry, if they had lost that challenge and ended up at tribal?
I'm not sure because last week I thought they could have gone either way, based just how good they felt about Tiffany and how much they kind of wanted to keep going with her if she was continuing to be erratic versus going with Xander, who did have power, but like using that power versus cutting that power, which is something that you know way too much about. So I'm not sure because I guess we didn't get to see them. I feel like that afternoon would have been important. Like how Tiffany behaved, I think might have worked a lot into that. I also think it's interesting when we talk about the similar dynamics between Yasa last week and Ua this week. Last week, Evie makes that decision knowing that Xander's a little bit far from having this power. Like, two things haven't been set. He's the only one, clearly, who's found it. Two need to be found. Whereas with Shan cutting Brad in that similar position, she knows that two now, said she read the note. Like, he's quite close to power, and I think that also might make a difference. So maybe it would have mattered. Like, oh, now Brad has said it. Okay, well, Tiffany's being okay. We might be a little close to this. Maybe we should just cut him now. Or if you're really, like, making your bed with, like, no, we want to use that power. We want to use that idol for good. I think it would have been a similar decision to what we were talking about how they would move forward last week. But the reason that I loved what they did last week was because they gave themselves that option to be, like, really adaptable in that way and just go with whatever worked. But I do wonder if Brad talking about broccoli might have impacted that one way or the other.
Yeah. Yep. Because now Evie knows that, Xander's close to having not just his vote activated again, but, and having an idol as well. So that's like...
And an extra
twice
vote.
Of course. So, and like twice as dangerous. Well, three times as dangerous. It's a lot. So then I think that...
So much to consider.
Surely, I'd say Evie would have had to cut Xander this time around and stuck with the girls there.
You got to think, like, it's difficult from, like, Shan and Evie's perspective when you're in these real power positions and you're thinking about so many factors that these other people have. Like, but also don't have, like, you're really weighing it up. And I honestly, even though they made different decisions on it, I think structurally they made the same decision, and that's the most important thing to me in keeping Tiffany and JD. And I also just, like, really back the way that both of those people are, like, managing those threats and maintaining it with Evie and cutting it with Shan. I think it works for both of them, and I think they're both really, really good players, and I'm really enjoying watching how they strategize around the monster and these scary things, and I think they're both doing really well with it, but in different ways of maintaining and cutting that power.
Yeah. And the thing now, after going on and playing and now being able to come back and talk about it, like, I have a really great appreciation for the power of a good read. I think that's
the
really important.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and it's really, it's like all well and good to be able to, you know, sit here and talk about it. And when we see the snapshot and everything that's happening, and I'm going to sit back on my couch and you know, point fingers and clap.
Literally, that is my job.
Everything that's going on. But then I really appreciate someone who can pick up what's going on in the time when it's happening. And I think the best players do that. And I think that, you know, we've seen Evie and Shan have already done that so well, you know, in this season. And that's what, you know, a couple of episodes in, like, you know, well done there. And, you know, I think that both, say, George and Haley did that so well in my season. So, you know, hats off to them to see it in real time when, you know, you're not privy to everything that's going on. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as we're talking about great gameplay, should we start awarding this gameplay with the Chizzy?
Hell yeah.
Okay, take it away, Jacob Saker Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, the Chizzy. Simon, would you like to go first and give out your 3-2-1 points for who played the best this episode?
Yeah, I would like to go first. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, there's a lot of power to have. And
yes.
I tried to put a lot of thought into this. And I also didn't want to make the wrong decision.
Yes.
So going through the Chizzy, I actually just started like going through like the bits and pieces of the episode and where I analyzed it, I was, you know, almost giving people a point for where things that they did that I liked and things like taking away from a point if I, you know, think they made the wrong decision or something that I didn't like. And it ended up all over the shop. And I'm like, oh, this kind of doesn't really work. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to come up with another strategy. But I think the easiest thing was giving 3 points to Shan.
Yeah.
This was her episode. She has found herself in a great position in the tribe. You know, being number one to three of her four tribe mates, she's been involved with so many important discussions around camp. You know, she had it was ultimately her decision to send Brad home in the end. And just even like busting JD with that advantage and then holding on to that power, like just those little things and having like JD like so in her pocket, like. Yeah. Yeah, just so well played all around. I don't think she put a foot out of step this episode. So hats off to a great episode for Shan and 3 points there.
Yeah, and yeah, 2 points.
2 points. This was, yeah, 2-1 was hard for me, but I didn't give 2 points to Sydney in this one. I think she was building a lot of social capital on the Luwu tribe, and I know that hasn't been tested yet. I think that, I hope that her approach to kind of, form the group against the common enemy of the seer works out for her. I mean, she finds the advantage. I think she plays it all right. when they go on the ship or to the island at midnight. And she protected her vote. She went in saying that that's what she wanted to do and that's what she came out with. I was a little bit let down that she didn't form any strong bonds there. I think she had a good read on the situation and her awareness around that. So, yeah, 2 points to Sydney.
Yep.
I am a little bit worried about the previews for next week's episode because it does look like we get a fair bit of Sydney and she doesn't have that same kind of clarity, I guess. So,
well, that'll be for next week's chizzies to decide. Yeah.
Well, that's next week, yeah.
Yeah.
And then 1 point was tough. Like, I did want to give, like, something to Tiff, but I just couldn't. From her kind of gameplay and from her motivations being a little bit different to her actions and a couple of her reads and stuff like that and not having the opportunity to, make strong bonds when she had that advantage, I couldn't give it to her. So I think my 1 point for a safe bet goes to Ricard for just being so calm and logical to work with Shan to vote out Brad. He's also in a really strong position in the tribe and just how he's worked his way back from that initial vote there. I think that, well, I know we didn't see a lot of him, but I think that when it comes to the chizzy, I think he gets my 1 point.
Yeah, I mean, I can see all of that. I'll talk about it in my points because I thought about all those people. 3 points I will give to Shan. I think that agreed is the most obvious, but just by being that center person, by backing the decision the same way I gave 3 points to Evie last week, it's very similar here with Shan. And even though we'll talk about it, like, I do really credit Ricard in some of this because obviously he benefits the most because he would really be on the outs if they cut JD and Shan would still be in a three. I do credit the way that Ricard played that with Shan, and I even credit JD, which we'll talk about in getting back some trust with the extra vote, but I still give most of the agency to Shan. She made her own decision. She knew what she wanted to do. She used her own connections. She's just so close to everyone. Like, it's a flawless social game. It's a great read. I back the decision. It's a very easy 3 points for me. I will give 2 points to Ricard, who I feel it's also the ascent from possibly being on the outs with Sarah earlier on, now getting to a middle position with Shan. And I just think handling her really well and the decision really well, like, again, it was very important for him that this goes one way, but I feel like he kind of left it to her own devices while, like, rationally giving pros and cons, hearing her out, and just being, like, a good sounding board for her. And I do think that keeping him in that Liana role as a pair, really, keeping his longevity in the game, I think that's basically why Shan has to make this decision. So the fact that his position in the structure of the tribe can be so important speaks to basically how important he is to Shan. Like, everyone sees her as a number one, and I think he's her number one, and I think that that's really important. So I think for him to just, like, he's in a really good spot right now. I credit him a lot in that as well, and I think he did really well with that. So
especially when Shan was so like emotional in that moment there, I would have liked to see the follow up conversation between Ricard and Shan. But of course, we were never going to see that as we kind of go into tribal council guessing about what's going to happen. He was very, very good under pressure there, and done very well.
Yeah, like, last week I gave to Evie and Liana, here I've given to Shan and Ricard, who I put in those roles, and I do think like being able to be, because these tribes are getting decimated, mostly Yasa was getting decimated, but like, if they're going to whittle down, like, you really need to have like a middle game thinking of like, where is this going, who is out next in the next two, and the fact that I think those two pairs have kind of secured themselves final two in those tribes, and like, if they never swap, it could get to that point, I think is really, really powerful strategically. So I have to credit definitely Shannon that for always being in the middle, definitely Evie in that and always being in the middle, but for Liana and Ricard to be that pair with them and to be like weaving through the game, and now to be in this middle position where they have JD and they have that vote and they have Genie who they could cut as well, and Genie and JD, as we said, will never really work together, like, they're just in such a good spot. And for Ricard, it's even more impressive because of where he came from to get to this point. So 2 points there. And actually, like, literally, I was like, maybe three. Like, I really, on the rewatch, I really, really liked the way that he was dealing with Shan. But then I was like, nah, Shan made her own decision. But
that may have been, if Ricard had got 3 points there, that might have been like the least amount of airtime that someone had to score 3 points.
Well, he got the fishy from Steven. And Shan, because like Stephen was much more like, this was great for Ricard, same as Stephen gave for Liana last week, because it was like definitely good, whereas like Shan is cutting a connection with someone who shows her so much trust, which yeah. I think Stephen really didn't like when he gave out his fishy. Evie also cut Voce, who Evie has so much trust with. The problem is that when you have so much trust with everyone, like there's no way to get out of that. So like, yes, Shan did cut a key ally, but like everyone is giving her that trust. JD's also giving her a vote. Like, yes, he's maybe showing less trust because he got caught in that way, but I don't doubt that JD is going to be very loyal to Shan. So like someone's got to go. So
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I think like, can't fault her, but also think Ricard was great. I'm going to give one vote to JD.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I love this. Cause I feel like I'm always like usually judgmental of people's points. People don't usually give it back to me, but I love that you're like, what are you doing? No, he was a hot mess. He was a hot mess. But like, I have to give him a point. He was sloppy. Well said by Shan as well. But I have to give him a point because he found use for the useless extra vote. And I think it helped. I think it saved him. Like Tiffany last week couldn't give the point in the same structure because I feel structurally that's what saved her. Like the fact that they couldn't just doom Liana by taking out Tiffany and leaving Liana on the side. This time I think that may have contributed. And also I think JD got back some of that crystal, some of that trust by using the extra
vote. I did like that metaphor.
Yeah, I'm like, JD has so many metaphors that if he were to find the Beware advantage, like no one would even bat an eyelid about what he was saying because it actually just tracks with how we talk. But I feel like that was helpful. I feel like it was an innovative way to use something that's so useless in the extra vote. And I feel like it worked. So while it's never going to be more than one point because so much was done poorly and he was so sloppy and he possibly could have been like someone they were actively thinking of voting out for like quite a large portion of this episode, I also think he saved himself. I also was like, I couldn't really give many other points because Brad, who I think played the decision the best, went home.
You can't give points out when you get eliminated. That's not how it works.
No, I mean, I have in the past given
have you?
Memorial Chizzy points, yes, but Brad didn't do enough, I felt, to like, it wasn't like, wow, you just got really screwed, but you did nothing wrong. Like things were done. Like he lost that battle of relationships and put Shan off. And yeah, I guess it didn't work out great structurally as well, but I think he did enough to himself where he wasn't going to get a Memorial Chizzy point. But Sydney and Tiffany as well, like I couldn't give them points because I feel like Tiffany, especially coming in with such a negative relationship with Sydney, it's bad on both of them, but it felt like really bad on Tiffany and the misread. And then Sydney, I like that she protected her vote, but I still don't like that she comes out with a negative relationship with Tiffany. And I felt like she was way too open with putting off Nasir in the tribe. Like, I feel like he now has a reason to dislike her and not want to work with her. And if they get, like, it might necessitate throwing a challenge or they get to a swap or a merge where it comes back to bite her. Like, I just thought it was way too sloppy and I couldn't give to Sydney and no one else did a lot much as well. So I couldn't those were the points that I could give.
I saw Sydney's move like from the other angle. Like I saw it as a good way to bond and solidify something before you kind of get to tribal. And, I thought that was included because like in the way of the edit, because maybe that's the direction that it would be potentially going down. And then the fact that she found the advantage and she saw it and she's like, I have to just take this now to not, ensure that Heather and, Onasir like don't get it. And then she was just so adamant. Like she scored a lot of points in me being like, my vote is my most important thing in this game. I'm like, yeah, but it makes a lot of sense. I think she articulated that really well. She had great awareness around that. So yeah, I'm going to be following her really, really closely. I'm upset that she's been pitched against the seer who was one of my favorites there.
Yeah, like you're the villain now if you're against the seer. Like don't ever, like just from an editing perspective, like don't do that. People will hate you.
Yeah.
And
look, I think it is a good point you make about JD like finding a use for that vote. He did well. Like that is kind of creative there, but I can't help but feel that I feel like that door was opened by Shan as opposed to being opened by JD. In that regard. So yeah, I think it was more thanks to Shan.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she gets 3 points, he gets one. But I still think that it's his decision to give the vote. Like she's not saying to him, like, well, are you giving me the vote? Like he actively makes that choice.
Yes.
And I feel like that that's a good choice. It made a lot of sense.
And then Shan's line about you're grounded, you'll get this back when you've been well behaved. I loved that.
Yeah. So I think he did. I mean, Sydney, I felt like I agree there was some good stuff there, but then there was like a lot of like really negative stuff that I just wasn't going to give the points to. It's interesting with Brad, like he was doing a lot of stuff, a lot of big stuff. Like in an episode, in one episode where you're going to make a fake body, talk about broccoli badly, find two advantages, lose all your votes and gain votes and go on a mission and a nighttime mission and then get voted out. Like, it honestly feels like it might have been bigger than it was. Like, I think it, a lot of it comes down to like, yeah, like, yes, the threat of the things, which is obviously something you know too well. But like, also again, like we talk about that structure where Ricard will sit in that structure and just like old school, losing a battle of relationships where Shan might feel a little bit better about JD, or Shan just might not want to be a three with Brad and Jeannie and feels more like she can control more individuals in another way. Like, it's more a structural and strategic thing, even though, yes, there are so many bells and whistles. Like, it's all bells and whistles. But kind of take that away, I think you can boil it down to not fitting in as well in the numbers, being a little bit more out with certain groups and with certain people. Yes, being too threatening. But, like, these are all, like, very organic parts of Survivor. It's just that they now come with like funny little lines and boat missions and stuff, but it's less about that for me than just like where you fit into the structure, and I do think that was mostly his downfall.
And I think that, you know, in another system that's not cheesy, I think that Brad scores very highly for, you know, what he has managed to achieve and his passion there. Like, you know, I know I said it was Shan's episode, but I mean this was Brad's climb to the top and fall to the bottom, unfortunately. I love watching him. Like, he's a great character. Fantastic.
So the Chizzy charts as they stand, Shan wins, I think, her second Chizzy out of three episodes. She is now on 13 points. Evie is on 9. And then we've got a few people on 3. We now have Ricard on 3, Xander on 3, Liana on 3. Sydney goes up to 2 with your points. JD is on 1, Danny is on 1, and Deshaun is on 1. So that's where the charts stand. And should we get to some questions as well?
Let's do it.
Larry Evangelista asks, I want to hear if the Simon and Brad vote outs are the same or not, which we've obviously spoken about, but I want to hear if Danny and Shan both did it wrong or not. Now, I find this interesting because we were obviously very critical of Danny in voting you out, and we've just given Shan the Chizzy win, 6 points. So where do you see that disparity? Unless you thought Danny's move was great, because we never really heard your take on it. I feel like I was critical.
Okay, yeah. Look, to put it quite frankly, I thought that Danny's move to get me out was a horrible move, mm-hmm. and I was so shocked at the fact that anyone would turn on a tested ally so early in the game, leading into such an important like part of the game, like to have that person there I would have given her one of my idols. Like, this is for us. This is for us to proceed and to go as far as we can. Like, you stood by my side. I will be loyal to you now. So there was never any question, from my opinion, going back to Danny, whether as this is still early in the game and, you know, you're trying to work out what this means. You still don't know exactly, like, where people can kind of go or where they end up on, you know, at tribe swaps and things like that. That kind of power that Brad could have, not that it would have affected probably on Shan, but it would have doused Shan's control within the game at that point. Like, she wouldn't, like, now she's in a tribe where she is calling all of the shots. But if Brad makes it through that and then, you know, has the idol and all the power, then like Shan forgoes that. Whereas I was in a position where I was willing to share that and proceed together to protect us all. And that was, you know, a relationship that we had. We'd been through multiple boats together. We'd been there for each other. And yeah, I don't think it was the right time to turn on an ally at that point in the game, knowing that, you know, we needed numbers going into merge.
Yeah. I feel like as well, they're both cutting prime allies, but Shan has prime allies with everyone, right? Like, everyone,
she's
like,
got allies elsewhere. Yeah.
Like, it feels like either way she's cutting like a really important connection, whereas Danny cut you, who was one of her main allies. I do think in hindsight how well she rallied from that socially does make it a slightly better move than what I thought at the time, but I do think there was like differences in relationships where she cut like an absolutely key ally for her, and then she did forge other connections at the merge so much better than I thought she would, or rally from that. She did say that Emmett was mad at her at the merge, but she finds those relationships, Braun do get majority. Like, when she initially did it, I thought like, wow, like Danny is who will have no one because she will have Chelsea, but then she's cut you. And where else are her Braun allies? Because we had seen Braun as so divided, and everything that I heard in the exits was like, Braun were divided, but there was like other relationships there that helped them rally through some of these strategic fractures better than I've seen most groups ever do that. So I do think the way that Dani rallied to the other relationships, even while cutting one of her two main relationships in you, makes it slightly better in hindsight. But I feel like that's more set up for Shan, where there's no rallying to be done. Like, every single relationship is that
she's
key.
Already got it there.
Like, she's cutting as close a relationship as anyone else, except this person also has the power. Not like Dani cutting a main relationship with the power versus other people that she's not as close with who don't have power.
Yeah, and I think like the size of the tribes makes a big difference as well. At what point does someone become disposable? And what it's like moving forward. So yeah, that was a interesting one for me. And look, I mean, Dani went on to she did very well. Well, she came sixth, I think. But after that, every alliance that she tried to make and get off the ground failed. Like, she had nothing go her way after that. And I can't help but feel like that was just such a short-sighted move at the time. And look, of course, being directly on the receiving side, I'm a little bit biased, but I just can't help but feel that, yeah, it was not the right move.
Yeah, I think like the Emmett move to me ended up being worse, like, because like at least she came back to what was a majority after you got voted out. But like after the Emmett move, it felt like she did get some relationships back, but like never enough to have the numbers, and she really put herself in a precarious position. So like, I'm definitely not on board with the idea of like take out big threat early. Who is your main ally who you could use as a shield, or whose power you could use. I just feel like for Shan, like, if she had no relationship with JD or less of a relationship and would really have to come back to camp and, like, reform some stuff or, like, actively form some stuff, that would be worse to me. But I feel like she's just coming back with the same social capital. She's just, like, got a surplus of social capital.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you know, Dani got blindsided in her own blindside, you know? Like,
yes, that is the sense of control and awareness that Shan has versus what Dani had in both of the attempted moves against you and Emmett, that's a very big disparity against what Shan was doing, just in execution versus what Dani was doing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest lesson I learned from that was really understanding that people won't always make the most logical moves. And I was very, like, calculated risk-averse at times, but, like, it was just so logical that it would never make sense for anyone to do that at such a time. But yeah, stranger things have happened, and yeah, I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, people do nonsensical stuff all the time. It's about preparing for that.
So that's that's something that I'll take to my grave.
Well, last question that I have, similar question, but on this note, Darko says on Twitter, what have you done with the idols since the show ended?
Oh, I have them in my Survivor bag with all my other little bits and pieces that I managed to take out of the game. I joked about selling them, but I think they're worth more to me than anything. And it is quite special because I was the only one who went home with an idol. Like, I know Kez did, but she gave hers on. I've got them. I'll frame one. I thought about hanging one around the rear vision mirror in my car, but I think that would definitely make for for someone getting very excited.
Someone's going to steal it.
breaking a windscreen and taking the idol. So for everyone out there, it's not hanging around my rear vision mirror. Yes. And it's in my bag at home. And we've got a very scary attack dog here, so don't come. I held on to them, and I think it's a cool thing to have, and being the only one who has them.
Can you do me a favor? And this will get so many likes on social media. Next week at your wedding, so you're getting married in a week and you're still here podcasting, I really appreciate it. You need to bring them both, and you need to have one photo in your photo shoot with your new wife, and you need to each be wearing one.
Oh, my God.
That will go off on Instagram.
So, look, the Survivor's taken over a massive, like, part of my year this year. And, Beck, we've kind of had a bit of an agreement that we won't be saying the S word, Survivor, at the wedding.
But just the one photo, Simon. It looks so good.
Okay. Well, it just means I need
to
take
it. But then, no, I don't want it to cause, like, a day one divorce. Like,
That would be horrible. Okay, look, I'll see if I can make that work for you. That'd be pretty funny. But then, like, the other part is that my marriage celebrant You said, oh, you know, write your vows on a really special piece of paper that you can give to, you know, the other person, you'll keep it forever. And I'm like, oh my God, how funny would it be if I pull out the note which says, like, you know, I write my vows on the back of the congratulations you have found a hidden immunity idol note, like, because that's a really important piece of paper to me. And then when we go to do our vows, I pull that out of my pocket and then start reading the wrong part. And like, yeah, that'd be a surefire way to get my ass dumped. But okay, I'll see what I can do. I might have
runaway bride. So, I can give marriage advice 2 years in, but I don't know that I can give, like, don't make Survivor too much a part of your life marriage advice, because that's not one that I stick to. Like, because we did the Survivor proposal and it was my hands. Like, it wasn't a big part of our wedding day. I did call him my number one ally because he is. That was, like, you know, the end of my speech. But yeah, I think at a wedding, maybe, yeah, it's been a lot. I understand it's been very, like, you focus, Survivor focus. You don't need to make it like a theme of the wedding, but just one photo, just pull them out and be like, please.
It's just been like, it's an amazing experience and one of the best things that I have ever done, but it's also been, like, so selfish. And, you know, the way that I've been very much so focused about me and my goals and my experiences, and I put myself before my friends and family. Like, it's been really tough. I'm very cautious of what it means for, you know, for Beck and I, because I love this game. And I can't wait for, you know, what it means for, you know, me in the future, and then, you know, whatever, you know, potential returnees. But, like, yeah, I can't wait to go back and, you know, just digest so much more of you know, Australian and US Survivor, and uncover more about, like, just watch it with a different lens, because you know so much more, like, once you've been through it, about what actually might be going down and why things are happening. And that kind of appreciation I will not be taking for granted.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to you what I wanted to say to Liana, like, cut yourself some slack. I know it's a lot. Like, I do get that. I mean, it's an obsession, even for me not playing, and it can take over, especially Australian Survivor, which doesn't give you a moment to breathe, and it is a lot. But, you know, you move forward now. You did this podcast a week before your wedding. You move forward. You get married. It's about that. You do just the one photo with the idols and make it more about her. And yeah, that's probably, okay, that's probably the advice.
Okay, you convinced me. I'll make it happen.
I'm sorry if that goes poorly. Then I take absolutely no credit for it. But I think Instagram would love it. Anyway,
yeah,
Simon, where can people find you on social media? I saw you were just on a template show, The Crafter, part of the family with Phil from your season as well. And people need to follow you on social media for your takes. You're on Twitter. That Instagram photo is going to come out. Wedding photos. Like, you know, tell the listeners what you have going on.
Yeah, so look, Instagram and I'm just getting into Twitter a little bit more, mainly to be talking about the show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, follow me on Instagram at simon.me89. Yeah, that's where I kind of am, and yeah, I'd like to share a little bit more about, like, my kind of experience on there and stuff, but I'm also kind of conscious of, you know, Survivor fatigue for me.
What fatigue?
it's a lot. I'm sure you've kind of seen it with a lot of the, you know, previous players and stuff like that. So I'll find my balance there about, you know, what it means. But, you know, I've got a lot of other exciting things in my life that I'm looking forward to. And then, yeah, I'm also on Twitter. I think I'm simon.me.
I'll tag you.
Something like that. Yeah, you'll find it. And you're having kind of, yeah, tweeting a little bit about the show and other things I'm watching. Like, just finished Squid Game. That was excellent. And Clickbait as well. And I'd highly recommend both of them.
Yeah, I can't with Squid Game. I'm sorry. I Wikipedia'd it and the Wikipedia just gave me nightmares. Like, I love The Genius, which is a different South Korean show, which is, like, it's so fun, so good. That's just like a reality game show that is amazing. But Squid Game, you know, with the death, it's not for me. I can't.
Yeah, it's pretty gory, but there are some really interesting, like, social dynamics and social dilemmas there, which I just really enjoy. And, you know, a couple of little almost, you know, game theory, you know, bits and pieces, which I enjoy, like, you know, watching things on or putting that lens over things. And that's been a lot of fun. So
yeah. I can't. I would enjoy that stuff, but the death is for me. I saw like two clips on Twitter and they scarred me. So I can't do, yeah, I can't do like nine true, episodes or however many episodes of that is. Yeah, but you guys can follow me at Shannon Gates, where I'm tweeting about Survivor, but not Squid Game. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed. And it's also on Spotify, as I've been saying, and reality TV or Hap-Ups. Also, I want to say, like, it's how early are we into the month? I've like lost track of time, but through the Survivor season, consider becoming a patron of RHAP, where all of the stuff is getting spoken about. There was some interesting news in the Australian Survivor casting rumors this week. We talk about it all in the patron group. I won't say much. I mean, I can't confirm or deny what is known, but yeah.
That is huge. I think we are going to be in for, like, regardless of what's been out there and what's truth and what's not, it's going to be huge come February.
Yeah, they spoke about it on Know-It-Alls. Anyway, come talk about it in the Patreon group. I'm also talking about it on Twitter. I'm finished covering both Australian Survivor and Survivor South Africa for the year. All my deep dives are done. Mike has the last one with Inesu, but we put out, he spoke to Nicole, I spoke to Smash, Chappies we did together, Tyson, Kieran we did together, and Suntony. So that's done. Obviously, he spoke to Haley and George as well. So that is done. But we'll be doing more on Immunity Island because next week, and I don't know how this will manifest in the action of the episode, but I'm sure it will be relevant. But I have Amy and Rainier, which I find hilarious. Like, they were tied destinies in Survivor South Africa, Immunity Island. They will be tied destinies on the podcast, which is just a concept that really tickles me. So I don't know what's going to happen if two people will go home together or something.
Double eviction
is happening. I'm telling you, because now it's in the stars. So
we'll see. If you hit a couple in a row, like that'll be crazy.
It's happened a few times this year. Like, I don't know what's going on. This one was the funniest to me, but something interesting is happening. But Simon, thank you so much. Congratulations again on your upcoming wedding. I hope I didn't ruin it. I hope that it goes through. But I love chatting to you. I love getting your takes on the game. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been such a great community to be a part of. And I really have enjoyed this whole other side of, like, pulling back the covers and talking about it and uncovering just so much more of this amazing game, which I'm absolutely frothing over. So thank you very much for having me on. I've had an absolute blast.
No, it was a fun time. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. I will see you next week with our Tide Destiny's guest. But until then, have a good week. Bye.
See you guys. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shkeli.
Aldi. Million rubli.
Try the spoke.
Scheibe trocken.
Ship.
Try
the spoke.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.